This episode of Retronauts is brought to you by Opera GX.
This week in Retronauts, this is a podcast we're making. This is a podcast we're making. This is a podcast we're making. Podcast time. This is a podcast we're making. This is a podcast we're making. This is a podcast we're making. Podcast time. Welcome back to Retronauts, and welcome to this very special episode.
It could not have started any differently than that.
Yes, after our episodes last year detailing the Capcom Marvel Universe, episode 608, and then the Marvel Capcom series, 651, today we've arrived at the blockbuster, really. The series that took two different companies and said, you know what? Let them fight. Let us fight. Because the two companies work together in this to agree to use each of the characters in a magical crossover that I'm calling SNK vs. Capcom, because that's where my allegiance lies. Sorry, spoiler for that one. But it's cute how each company made their each own games, and in each company's games, they gave themselves top billing. It's adorable. It's adorable how corporations work that way. But you know me, I'm Diamond Fight. Let's go on with our guests. So first, our returning guest from the great state of Ohio.
Right on a great lake. Hi, I'm John Learned, and a friend in need is a friend indeed.
Thank you. And from the also great state of Maryland?
It's Kevin Bunch, and I'll stain my hands with your blood.
Oh my God, don't, no. That's impossible to get out, Kevin. Don't do it. And joining us for the first time from New York, I think?
Yes, New York City.
Yes.
I'm Jero. I run a YouTube channel called The Seven Force, and I mostly do retrospectives on fighting games, but particularly the Capcom versus games.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I do not have a funny thing to say there. I couldn't think of anything.
That's the good thing about like podcasting about fighting games. You can just sort of cherry pick your favorite win quote as your weird pithy thing to say.
Oh, I should. Well, I felt like I had like the Wubba Wubba quote in mind, but I felt like that was a little too obvious.
You're in the pink today? Really?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Hey, I did that bit for a Fatal Fury episode. No copying. Anyway, we're here because as Capcom has been very generously going back to their past catalog and bringing things back for modern audiences, they've already announced Capcom Fighting Collection 2, which amongst its many titles includes their entries in the Capcom SNK series, along with other games that are related, like Street Fighter 3 Upper, and some Power Stones, and Capcom Fighting Jam, because I guess someone wants that. And, you know, since we already had our episodes on the Marvel series last year, now it's time to talk about Capcom SNK. I should also point out that we're recording this in early February 2025. Capcom has already announced a Capcom Spotlight in the coming days, where they might even announce the release date for this collection. So if the release date is a known property, we'll just add it in right here in like a robot voice as I hold my, you know, bottle in front of my mouth. It's releasing on May 16.
Boy, I can't wait to play it.
Yes.
I'll be right there on day one.
Same.
Very excited. I'm wonder what President Trump will say. So how did we get here? Well, let's start with the tail of the tape. You know, whenever two companies fight, we need to talk about who those companies are. So let's start with the blue corner, Capcom. And for those of you who don't know, Capcom was originally founded in 1979 as IRM. And if you're saying, hey, that sounds like IRM, well, guess what? Kenzo Tsuchimoto, the founder of Capcom, also founded IRM. So he had a thing. He had a thing that he was going on there. Although apparently IBM didn't like the name very much, which is one reason why they eventually moved on to different names. Because IBM's like, hey, three letters with an I and an M. I think we own that, sir. Anyway, the Capcom that we know officially started in 1983 And Capcom, by the way, not short for Captain Commando. No, that's a marketing gimmick. The actual abbreviation was for Capsule Computers. That's the official origin of the name. But whatever. They've been Capcom for over 40 years now, so that's just what it is.
I like the idea that they founded themselves as Captain Commando, though. Just like, just right off the bat. Like, this weird guy, this is us.
I mean, it's based in Osaka. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a man walking around Osaka this very day who calls himself Captain Commando. Everyone's like, yep. Yes, sir. Anyway, Capcom's first official game is Volgus, which, you know, as was the style at the time, it was a Xevious-style shooter. I was very surprised to learn that SNK actually published the North American version of Volgus. So, you know, a foreshadowing of future events. But really, I would say the sky's the limit for Capcom. I think that they've been on a basic trajectory ever since, like growing over time. They had arcade successes throughout the 80s. They started on consoles. They found great success on consoles, like Mega Man is 87. And they started, you know, at first they like outsourced their console games, but eventually like, no, we can do this. And they start doing it themselves. And they start making their own console games. And all of a sudden, I think they realized pretty early on that, oh, the console game's kind of more money than the arcade game, isn't it? But hey, somewhere in there, they also invent Street Fighter II, which radically, I want to say reinvents, but also kind of invents the fighting game that we know of. So,
and also saves the arcade market for a little bit in the West, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the arcade market was already kind of fading a little bit at the end of the 80s, early 90s. And then Street Fighter II says, hey, you like this, right? And for another 5-6 years, everyone says, yes, we like this. Until the inevitable again.
it's less of a shot in the arm and more of a punch buggy right to your...
What's the thing that Phoenix does where she gets really powerful, but then her life just starts draining faster? It's like...
She can't control it.
X Factor, yeah.
She's back for a little while. But yeah, that's Capcom. You know Capcom. Everyone listening to this podcast has probably played at least 3 Capcom games in their lifetime, I'm getting. I think it's a safe bet. Safe bet for me. Meanwhile, in the red corner, because their early cabinets were red, SNK. SNK, for the record, stands for Shin Nihon Kikaku, which I would translate as New Japan Program, New Japan Progress Possibilities. Kikaku is kind of a funny word. However, they have been officially known as SNK since 1986. They dropped the Japanese long version in the early 80s. And like Capcom, they're originally based here in Osaka. Actually, SNK was born in Suita, which is a city right north of Osaka, and they had their HQ there right up until 2023. Only recently did they relocate to the city proper itself. So these days, both Capcom and SNK are in the city of Osaka. I don't know how close the headquarters are. I hope they're very close. I hope they can, like, throw paper airplanes at each other. That'd be really funny to me.
Marvel and DC, they were, like, across the street from each other in New York City.
Are they really? Oh, that
they,
makes sense.
Well, at least they used to be. I don't think anymore. Yeah.
Anyway, SNK's first game is kind of a asterisk minefield because they had earlier games that were just like breakout clones, and their first official game is Ozma Wars, which is basically Space Invaders. It's very close to Space Invaders with like one extra gimmick. Some listings actually call their first game Sasuke vs. Commander, which is 1980. I mean, that's kind of a more original game, but also it's kind of Space Invaders again, so.
But it has boss fights, which is very unique for the time.
Yes, I think it's safe to say that SNK invented boss fights, and they also never let us forget that, because, wow, SNK bosses are a thing, and we'll talk about that later.
Oh, yeah.
SNK doesn't have the success that Capcom does. They certainly have lots of arcade hits, but the console hits, I think, are fewer and far between. They also do a lot of farming out. They don't make as many home console games as Capcom does. I think they do Crystalis. Crystalis is certainly a very unusual game for the NES that SNK makes themselves. Good on them. It has its fans. I'm not entirely sold on the sword switching thing, but whatever.
They did Baseball Stars. That's good.
Yeah. I think for most SNK fans like myself, the real magic comes in 1990 when SNK says, you know what? We're going to make our own console and it's our own arcade platform. And the two are basically going to work together. So instead of getting home versions of arcade games, you're just going to get the arcade game in your home, giant ROM cartridge and all. And it's going to be stupid expensive. And, you know, spoilers, it doesn't really work out for them financially. But if you're there, or if you pick it up on the cheap at the end of the 90s like I did, you are in for a really good time. Because I'm still out here pledging my life to Neo Geo games. I love them so much. And SNK as a company doesn't really last. They have serious problems throughout the 90s. They're bought out. They eventually go bankrupt in 2001, but immediately the original team forms a new company called Playmore, and they go over there and they start to buy their old properties from the old company. So the SNK we know today is basically a rebranding of the SNK Playmore that was birthed in the bankruptcy of the original SNK. I don't know. It's kind of like a Cleveland Brown situation, except the other SNK didn't really go anywhere. It just died, you know? So there's no Baltimore Ravens in this scenario. I'm sorry. This is a mixed metaphor. I'm sorry. Sorry, John.
I don't like that it went this way.
I'm sorry, John. Shouldn't mention that. But today, SNK is officially back. They're back in the game development game after a long time of just kind of like licensing out their stuff to like pachinko makers and whoever wants to pay them for their licenses. But now, like, you know, KOF 15, as we record this, there's a new Fatal Fury on the way. There's a new Art of Fighting on the way, allegedly. They've released a new Samurai Showdown for the first time in like 20 years. So
they announced a new Samurai Showdown RPG, no less.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. Like a month or so ago, they announced that's coming.
I live under a large rock.
I think even before that, I think it was like a year or so ago, they mentioned an action RPG Sam Show project. Like, I want to say like early 2023, late 2022.
Sounds right. I think that now is like when they first showed like some key art off for it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's definitely coming. Huh.
Companies alive, I hope are well, and they're rolling. So what better time to talk about Capcom SNK, SNK Capcom? So I've made my bones. I want to start with, John, where was your allegiance in the 90s, early 2000s?
Gun to my head, I was pro Capcom in this case. You know, had the NES, had a, I jumped from the NES to the Genesis pretty early on. And seeing Capcom games eventually finally show up on the Genesis was a heartwarming thing for me because, like, you know, I was still pretty young. We probably bought our Genesis when I was like 11 or 12. And, like, I was already feeling like weird nostalgia. Like, I remember those games from that company and they were good. And Street Fighter's good. I like that. I really do love SNK. I always will. And I would always sort of gravitate toward the SNK fighting games after I had my fill of like Children of the Atom and ST and whatever. But if I had to choose one, if you're throwing me into a death match here, it's going to be Capcom.
You're also wearing blue headphones, so I think
I am wearing blue headphones and a blue shirt.
Okay, so that's less evident on the cam, but I see.
Literally it. Okay. Wearing it on my sleeve, guys.
Okay,
sorry,
Kevin. I think I don't know if I know the answer for you. I have a guess, but please tell us.
It's probably an educated guess. So, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, obviously I had a lot of Capcom exposure because I had an NES, etc. But as soon as I had my own income and could become an arcade rat, I became an SNK diehard. And that has continued to now. I mean, I even have a Neo Geo. I've got assorted bits and bobs over all over the place. When these games were being announced, I was definitely more excited about the SNK side announcements than the Capcom sides. So I know where I'm at. I know where my bread's buttered.
And Jerome, please tell us, what were you in the late 90s, early 2000s?
So I was definitely, I would straight up say I was a Capcom kid growing up. Not for, you know, disinterest in SNK or anything. It's just I grew up with primarily like a Genesis and a Super Nintendo. I did have an NES, and I did, funnily enough, I did have Crystalis for that, too. I didn't play it much, but I did have that. But I was really exposed to just Capcom stuff on those platforms. I didn't really start getting into SNK stuff until I started going like with relatives to arcades, and they would hog all of the Capcom machines. So I'd go to the big old red machine. I'll play this game with this guy with a heavy machine gun, and yeah, that's how I got exposed to it. And then eventually, like, I think a friend of mine in like 2001 got a Neo Geo Pocket Color. And that, funnily enough, is kind of what put me onto like the greater library. And then I just kind of branched out to Neo Geo stuff from there. But Yeah, gun in my head, Capcom.
Hang on, hang on. You had a friend that had a Neo Geo Pocket Color in 2001?
He wouldn't shut up about it. He got it like
a hero.
I think he got it on clearance. It came with like I forgot what they call them. Those big packs that came with like four games and like the really...
Oh, the bundle pack?
The blister packs, yeah.
Yeah, the blisters. There we go, yeah. And he wouldn't shut up about it. So I played it and I see why he wouldn't. It was pretty fun.
I had two friends in high school that had Neo Geo Pocket Colors when they came out, like 99, 2000. And you better believe they were extremely upset when SNK just abruptly said, oh, right, we're not only canceling all support for this, but we're like taking back all of our cartridges that we'd shipped to the US to repurpose them for Japan.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd never even heard of it until probably like 04, 05 at least, when like some dude in a ratty, nasty Toledo game shop was like, ever see one of these, man? I'm like, I don't like where this conversation's going.
But you should have. It's an amazing piece of hardware.
It took Retronauts for me to buy one. Like 10 years ago, we did an episode. Meaning Jeremy and Christian Nutt did an episode about it. I'm like, I'll finally buy one of these. And I love it. It's great. I just wish I wish I listened to the advice of that ratty old weirdo.
Oh, we've all been there. We've all been there. So, speaking of ratty old weirdos, how did we get here to the point where two companies decided to enjoy with one another? Well, it starts as usual in Osaka. Both companies headquartered in Osaka, and they had a lot of crossover between them as far as people going from one to the other. There were obviously some very high-profile departures. Takashi Nishiyama, who basically created Street Fighter 1 and Kung Fu Master and a lot of other games, he was an early SNK hire, which means he was the guy behind Fatal Fury, which is why Fatal Fury 1 looks so much like Street Fighter 1 and not Street Fighter 2. So at some point, Nishiyama on SNK spoke to Yoshiki Okamoto at Capcom, and he's like, hey, we should do this. We should work together on this. We should, you know, license our characters to each other. And then they both went off to their respective bosses and basically sold them on the prospect. I suspect a lot of these guys were probably drinking together. I mean, it's Osaka. I can't believe they wouldn't meet up at the same bar every now and then and say, hey, how's it going? You making any money? Blah, 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 blah. Because there's plenty of evidence that the two were aware of each other. Even though Capcom was a far larger company, you know, there were little seeds here and there showing that they were looking at the other company and seeing what they were doing and either trying those things for themselves or making fun of them. In the case of Dan Hibiki, who is very clearly a Capcom character made to mock art of fighting in general, based on his clothing and his ponytail and the fact that his moves don't go very far because he's out of spirit. And Kevin, you had a whole thing here that I didn't even notice about Yuri. Yuri turned to Nakamura at some point.
Yes, so Yuri Sakazaki, Ryo and Robert's, third wheel, so to speak. So in the King of Fighters series, because they haven't made a new Art of Fighting in years and years, they've slowly been turning her into an Akuma parody character, giving her little moves here and there. To the point where, at one point she even had a raging demon for like KOF 2001. That, if I remember right, was
the official name.
Yes, which was the same motion as the her inputs as the Raging Demon, and she'd charge up to him. The screen would flat like white out. You'd see all the hit sparks, and then she would pose. But it's at the point now where in the last couple KOF games, she's had like Akuma's dive kick. She's had his air fireball. Like, she had an air fireball before that, but now it functions the same way. And they even gave her a demon flip, which functions just like Akuma's demon flip. So you could literally play her as like a rushdown terror, like Akuma. And yeah, that's why she's continually been good. It's really funny that someone was like, you know what? This character's supposed to be a karate prodigy. What if we like lead into that and just make her an absolute terror?
I hope like if they do a Garo, like, Art of Fighting kind of thing where they jump the timeline by like 10 or 20 years that she's actually a murderer too.
You know, I'm still calling.
You know, just really dig deep into it.
I'm still calling that the new Fatal Fury game needs to have her, you know, like 47 years old as the new like Ms. Karate, just a nightmare on the streets of Southtown. Make it happen, yes. SNK. I need this. Oh,
I'm behind this 1,000%.
I'm really hoping for that. As somebody that mains Yuri in like most KOF games, I'm really hoping for that. And I'm pretty sure one of the stages, like I think it's the gym stage. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be her gym. So yeah, that could happen. I'm pulling for it.
We've also got some evidence that, according to one of the many oral histories over at Polygon about this series and the Street Fighter series and all these games altogether, that SNK staffers actually put Ryu and Ken into KOF 98 while they were working on it, just like as a joke. But, you know, they were planting their own seeds basically there, sort of just goofing off after hours. Along with other characters, not just Capcom characters. Apparently, but they put Son Goku in there too, which is like, don't threaten me with a good time, you know?
That's just one of those things where, like, you probably, like, I'm sure everyone thinks that internally these companies are probably doing these things just to tinker with them and have their own little, like, what-if scenarios. And that just confirms that, yes, they have been doing this. And I'm sure Capcom had probably put, like Ryo or somebody else into, like, a Street Fighter game just to test it out, just to kind of mess with it. You wish that those things continue to exist or not just on the cutting room floor, but, like... Yeah, it's great to hear that a developer was actually doing something like that. That's just also heartwarming.
Wasn't even the first fighting game to do that, if I'm remembering right. I know Sega kind of did the same thing with Fighting Vipers, where there was like a board programmer that just put Sonic and Tails in. And I think they showed it to the producer, then they showed it to Yu Suzuki, and then they showed it to Yuji Naka. And he's like, that's dope. If you guys do it, go ahead. You have my blessing. And that's how we got Sonic the Fighters.
Awesome.
that's right.
Jeremy here. If you're like me, you're old. And that means you probably use the internet the old people's way. Through a web browser on a computer, instead of being glued to your phone or having the surgically implanted Wi-Fi in your brain or whatever the kids are doing these days. But just because you're elderly and stuff doesn't mean you can't at least pretend you're young. That's why you should download Opera GX. The only browser that makes you feel like you're asking the internet, how do you do, fellow kids? It's the first browser that appears to have been made by Zoomers for Zoomers. Right now, Opera GX is offering a special deal exclusively for Retronauts listeners. Download it and pretend that you're 20 years younger and hipper than you actually are. Opera GX is the only browser that makes you feel like you're surfing the web through the menu screen of a Battle Royale video game. I don't think that's an accident. It's a browser created specifically for video game fanatics. It has an entire built-in feature called GX Corner, a custom site dedicated entirely to curating browser-based video games. Now, GX Corner isn't perfect. I looked, and I couldn't find a single search result for the words Heianchio or Zevius. But if you're in the mood for interesting indie games of all varieties, GX Corner is a great way to stumble across new, free games that you definitely would not have heard of if you relied on us old people at Retronauts for discovery. And it's highly geared toward current indie trends, not musty old ones that millennials like. There's entire tabs dedicated to roguelikes and card games, but not for Metroidvanias. Plus, it gives you ways to trick out your browsing experience with tons of game-themed supplemental material, too, like custom browser mods and skins. Okay, so you've downloaded Opera GX and successfully camouflaged your browsing experience as that of someone half your age. Great. But at heart, you're still an old person, which means that you really just want to fill your day with things that old people enjoy. For example, you probably love to freebase video game history through the amazing NES Works video series by your favorite retronaut, Jeremy Parrish. The great news is that Opera GX makes cranking up my viewership numbers to new heights easier than ever. You can take your current NES Works episode with you everywhere you go on the web with Opera GX's video pop-out feature. Just click the GX button that appears at the top edge of a video, and you'll cause that video to break out of the current tab and float in the corner of the screen, regardless of which other tabs you activate or which websites you browse to. It's like the way videos haunt you as you scroll down the page on Tumblr, except it happens everywhere on the internet. So thank you to Opera GX for sponsoring this episode and allowing me to remember what it was like to be young and have good metabolism. Enjoy the rejuvenating effects of the world's youngest-looking browser by using the link in this episode's description to download Opera GX today. Get a browser that's literally better at everything. Go to operagx.gg/retronauts.
So, all this comes together in 1999, and SNK gets the first strike here, because they release SNK vs. Capcom, The Match of the Millennium, for the Neo Geo Pocket Color. Yes! This crossover series began on the handhelds. Oh, and Kevin's waving the box just to let us know that he's got the actual copy.
I studied for this podcast.
So, if you've never seen a Neo Geo Pocket, it only has two buttons. So, with that in mind, it's a very simple game as far as controls. You've got one punch, one kick, and you know, hold the button for longer, more powerful strikes. Otherwise, you're just mashing the button to do like quick jabs. And it's kind of based, I would say, on the KOF style in that you're picking three characters, and you know, you basically you're making a team, and you're gets into the team
if you want to,
and you're fighting off one another. Yes,
because it has three modes. It has like a one-on-one versus mode, like a Street Fighter game. It has a tag mode, like a Marvel versus game, and it has the 3-on-3 KOF style.
Trying to appeal to all comers, I guess. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, they even have three different, what they call styles, as far as how to control these characters. The first, the names are not really selling them, but the basic one is called Average, which, you know, you build up a two-level gauge, you can hop forward. There's Counter, which is kind of like extra mode in KOF 98, where you've got one level of gauge and you have to hold the buttons to charge up. But then if you're low on health, you can do infinite supers, which for certain characters is deadly, and for other characters, it's kind of like, well, good luck with that. And instead of a roll, you have like a dodge, which is from KOF, that's sort of like, they throw their hands up like, oh, you can't hit me, I'm standing I'm standing out of your way, you can't hit me. Then there's Rush, which is basically the KOF 98 advanced mode, where you actually build up stocks, and you can spend the stocks whenever you want to use a super, you can run, but yeah, so all three modes are basically like other games, but they have just sort of generic names. And as far as the lineup goes, I think the character lineup is a decent spread of faces you know and faces you're surprised to see. You know, I think no one expected Akari from from The Last Blade to show up in this crossover game.
I really appreciate their lineup for this game, because it's compared to especially the Capcom released ones, it's such like a weird spread of characters. You know, you've got your Street Fighter representatives, but then you've got like multiple Darkstalkers characters. You have Evil Ryu from, you know, Street Fighter Alpha 2, I think was his first appearance.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And then on the SNK side, you've got like KOF characters, you got Fatal Fury, you've got Art of Fighting, you've got Akari, like you mentioned. You have Athena, Nakaruru, Haomaru. Like it's a pretty great lineup. Really good mix of playable characters. They also have some really fun cameos.
I also think that because of the Pocket Color, as with most of the Pocket Color games, the sprites are sort of, you know, downsized with big heads and tiny bodies, and it's a really just adorable look that works for basically every character in every game. I think it's a shame we don't see more of this. I know there was a game a couple years ago, I think called, was this called Pocket Fighter or Pocket Rumble? That was just like
Pocket Rumble.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's very good.
I think there's another one, too. I think it's Pocket Bravery, if I'm remembering.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, also okay. Good.
So, yeah, but I want more. I want more games that are just like, look, we like that style. We're just going to take that style and run with it. Because it's so cute. It's adorable. And it looks good on a small screen.
Agreed, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does this thing, like almost all of the, I don't think the Last Blade game does this, but all the Neo Geo Pocket fighting games do this thing where like, yes, the characters are super deformed, but like when they perform attacks, the limb gets bigger too. So like on that small screen, it sounds very ridiculous when I describe it, but like on a small screen like that, it makes it really easy to parse what's happening. In motion, it looks great. It's you can find plenty of videos of people doing like combo exhibition and stuff like that. But I'm super impressed with how much they crammed into this game, given the size of those cartridges, the ROM size of these cartridges, because they're pretty small. And this is a pretty sizable cast. It's like what, 15 on each side, give or take. That's a lot. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. And you get your SNK story mode, which I think they did a pretty good job with. And actually, since you were talking about the sprites, I really appreciate how the hitboxes are also just very chunky, too, to go with the chunky limbs. Because it lets you get some very, like, ridiculous combos off. And I just want to say that if you like Zangief, this game is the best he's ever been. they will never let him be this good again, because not only does he get his chunky hitboxes, not only does he do Zangief damage, but he can combo into his spinning pile driver and other command grabs like it were like it was a KOF game. And they continue to do spinning pile driver damage even when you combo into it. So, like, he gets a good hit on you, there goes, you know, half your life. It's truly remarkable.
That's how you know SNK made this game and not Capcom.
SNK cares. Yeah. SNK cares about grapplers.
Right.
Yeah, grapplers are super good. Yeah.
Speaking of combos, not intentional, I don't think, but there is a weird bug that only affects Chun-Li, Felicia, and Dan, where somehow if you set it up right, you can basically juggle them forever, essentially. Like, they have, like, they still, like, their hitbox remains active even as they're falling, which isn't the case for other characters. So if you go on YouTube, you can find people doing just in nuts, like, you know, 20 hit full life combos on these characters just because the game says, okay, go for it. I also like the basic layout of the game is like, okay, we know you're coming to this game from other fighting games. So all the backgrounds are kind of reminiscent of other backgrounds from other games, with the major exception of one of the Japan stages, which is set right here in Osaka, down on Dotonbori, which is a major tourist area. It's like a lot of electric signs, and they're fighting on a bridge, which is called Ebisu Bridge. It's just a very major tourist area, even today. So if you ever play the game and you see that one stage where there's a big ad in the background of a guy like raising his arms, that's the Glico Man. I don't think they call him Glico Man because that's a copyrighted character, but yeah. In real life, it's a Glico Man. He's a mascot of the company that makes Pocky. So it's a real place. Huh. And for the record, if you have the collector's edition of the recent re-release of this game on Neo Geo Pocket, and you have that the booklet that came with it, you can see a picture that I took in Dotonbori of my Switch with the game on it in the real place with a stage. It's a fun picture that Jeremy... Wow. Jeremy convinced me to go downtown and pick the picture, so I took that picture, and it's in the book.
Nice.
That's cool.
I feel like if I had any one real gripe regarding this game, it's that unlocking the hidden characters kind of sucks. Because, yeah, of all these characters that we talked about, four of them for each company are secret characters. Mm-hmm. And you unlock them by finishing the game. And depending on whether or not you continued and what the difficulty level was, you'll have just like this portrait of them that's like covered by blocks. And randomly, it'll explode some of the blocks. And it sure loves to explode blocks you've already blown up.
Oh, no.
and this keeps increasing in number of blocks for each character. So when you finally get to Evil Ryu and Orochi Iori, there's like 12 or something. And yeah, it's wretched. I think in the reissue, Code Mystics tweaked the game code so that it only ever pops the blocks that haven't been exploded yet, which is thankful, but, you know.
But you're still expected to go through the motions, yeah. Right?
Ugh. Yeah, me in college did not have a great time unlocking those last few characters, let me tell you.
That actually kind of leads into both my favorite and least favorite thing about the game, because one of the other unlockables, you can unlock alternate special moves for the entire cast, but getting that requires you to get like Olympic points, and you can get them through, I believe, the Olympic minigame mode. I think if you like transferred points with like Capcom versus SNK on Dreamcast, you got them too. But it makes the character grind look like easy. I don't think I've unlocked all of them like legit before. It takes like months. It's crazy. But you get these new special moves for characters like, I forget the name of the move. I can never pronounce it, but you get like Akuma's third strike move where like he slams down on the ground. I think it's like one of
The KKZ.
Yeah. I think it's one of the only games he ever got it in outside of third strike, but, he gets that. It's nice, but it just takes too long.
Some of them are really, like, super busted. Yeah, I know Evil Ryu gets a beam Hadouken from Marvel vs. Capcom. Yeah. Chun-Li gets her aerial super from Marvel Capcom 1.
The kick, yeah.
The kick. My favorite is Zangief gets a Cossack dance.
Like, okay, that's canon. Yeah, that's canon. He danced with Gorbachev. Never forget that.
He did. I can never forget that. But, you know, the Olympic mode, it is kind of a time sink, but you can tell they had a lot of fun with it, because this is where they throw in a lot of their other cameos. Like, your team coaches are Karin Kanzuki and Rimururu from Samurai Showdown, and, you know, you have different events based on which team you're playing on that time. And the events have, like, Yagyu Jubei, and I think Marco and Mars People are there, Felicia, oh yeah, Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins has his own mini game, like,
and it's called Ghost Trick. Like, Capcom took notes.
Yeah,
you don't throw away good ideas.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's a time sink, and it's kind of annoying when you just want to like play against other people with all this stuff unlocked. But like, I don't know. I think it's a pretty good way to keep this interesting for a portable fighting game, especially given how many other people had Neo Geo Pockets and copies of this. I think I've only gotten to play this over link cable a few times over the years.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, never. Not
yeah,
once.
when it comes to handheld games, you have to keep in mind that most of your players are not going to have someone else to play with. That's just, it's going to be an exception, not the rule. So you got to load it up with other stuff you can do and just, you know, entertain yourself. So you can shoot down UFOs or slash strawmen, or I think Felicia just has basically like a rhythm game where she's yes, dancing, yeah, or whatever. Like, sure, okay, why not? Use the sprites. Use them.
my favorite little addition to those Olympic games, it's super minor. I don't even know why they did it. But if you hold, I think, like the start button as you're loading up the Mars People Metal Slug game, you don't even see like the character you're playing as. You just see like a portrait of them up there, and it's usually Marco. But if you hold start, I think it changes to Fio, which is like a super small detail, but they just threw it in just because. It's like maybe just a handful of people on the planet that's going to appreciate that, but I still love that they did it.
You're one of them. That's the important thing.
Yeah. I think it's sick.
But that is the through line, I think, of this entire podcast, is that like whoever was making one of these games, whether it was Capcom or SNK, like, those little details were sort of sprinkled into all of these games. They're very lovingly made, and it definitely started right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be a common occurrence, that even if some of these games don't match our expectations, or didn't match them, or don't match them today, if you go back and you play them and you actually look at what's there, you have to respect what's there. You have to look at this like, oh, wow, mm-hmm, they put it in the work. No, none of these are quick cash grabs. You know what I mean? There's no, like, you know, they reuse assets when they reuse assets, but no one is just phoning this in. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, even this
game. No phone calls.
Even this game, like, most of the SNK sprites are from other Neo Geo Pocket fighting games, and, like, no one's going to complain about it because they look great.
Yeah.
And so SNK had made several pocket fighting games basically using this engine, and this is kind of the apex of it. Like, the Fatal Fury games that run on the Neo Geo Pocket Color are basically the exact same thing. The KOF games too, but just with the amount of stuff that's in this game, just like with the mini games and what's the amount of characters packed into it, like, this is clearly, SNK was probably thinking that this was going to be their killer app for the machine, for the Neo Geo Pocket Color when it came out in the West. And sadly, that it just didn't pan out that way, but probably no fault of theirs. But like, there's a lot of love in this game. It's very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. And hey, like everything else in this podcast, you can finally play it again. Like,
exactly. Right.
I was really happy when they reissued this, because it actually does hold up very well. Yeah. And it is a lot of fun with two people. You'll probably find that a couple of the boss characters that you can unlock are super broken against other human beings. But, you know, that's to be expected out of Geese Howard. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2021. That they re-released it for Switch and Steam. So you can buy and play this game right now. You don't need a Neo Geo Pocket Color. By all means, you should have a Neo Geo Pocket Color in your house because it's a good idea, but you don't need one.
And, you know, the Steam one, you can always just go online, find a save file that's already got everything unlocked, and just skip the middleman.
Yep, that's kind of exactly what I did. But and a fun little thing about the Steam version you can do, because of Steam's ability to remap buttons through Steam input, you can actually set it so that the long presses you usually have to do for heavy buttons are their own buttons. So you can make it a traditional four button Neo Geo game.
Oh.
And it makes it way easier to do combos. It's really fun.
I never thought to do that. That's really great.
Yeah, I never thought.
I think there's a config you can just, like, when Steam usually just lets you download other people's configs. I'm pretty sure there's one already preset for like a standard DualShock or Xbox controller. So yeah, go nuts.
I'm investigating this after this call.
So, anything else for the pocket, or shall we move on to the Capcom side?
We should say that, like, the card game for the Neo Geo Pocket Color is kind of, like, outside of the purview of what we're doing here, right?
SNK also made Card Fighters Clash for their own system, and years later made a Card Fighter Clash for the DS, which no one liked, and it was broken. I literally own the broken copy right here. It does not work. So... But we're not talking about that because they're not fighting games. Those are card games that are basically born in the wave of let's make a digital card game and sell it on two cartridges so people buy twice as many games. And it's just not part of this conversation. But yes, it is technically SNK versus Capcom, in that you've got lots of Capcom characters and lots of SNK characters, and they all have little cards with little art. And it's, again, very impressive. And my friends were diehards of the Neo Geo game, the Neo Geo Pocket game, but... That's it.
You know, yeah. I will make a note that you can link cable this SVC Mark of the Match of the Millennium to Card Fighters Clash to get points to unlock like special moves and stuff. So that's another way you can take that approach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say SNK was really good. I don't know what sorcery it took to give us a dedicated Neo Geo Pocket to Dreamcast cord. I feel like it sank both ships, but there are so many games that you can connect on the Dreamcast to the Neo Geo Pocket that mutually benefit both games. And I don't know why they did all this stuff, but it is amazing. Like at the time, I had a friend who was playing like KOF to Paradis, the sort of board game to unlock like character points in KOF 99 on the Dreamcast and vice versa. And he barely spoke Japanese at this point, but he was like putting in the work. And I'm like, God bless you. God bless you for figuring this out, because I would not learn Japanese for several years, you know? But let's move on to the next big event, and arguably the bigger of the two, because it actually hit arcades, is Capcom vs. SNK Millennium Fight 2000. And it's a Naomi game, which means it came to arcades, and it came to Dreamcast like a few months later. They were in a rush here. And Capcom SNK is all 2D. You got 2D backgrounds, 2D sprites, although there's a lot of 3D effects going on. I know in the sort of the quote-unquote final fight stage, like, the characters' shadows are very dynamically placed on backgrounds, like at different areas. Like it looks, it's a really cool looking effect. Not just the usual like fighting game shadow on the ground kind of thing. Like they cast large shadows depending where they're standing in the stage based on lighting effects.
It looks so cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. Now, obviously, it's a Capcom game, so this time around, most of the Capcom characters are reused from other Capcom games, but some of them have new sprites. You know, I think the Ryu sprite in Capcom SNK is original, I believe, right? It's not Alpha Ryu. It's
original. Yeah. Him right. and Ken, yeah.
Right.
And Akuma and M. Bison, they didn't want to use Fat yes. Bison for this from the Alpha games, so he looks more like his Street Fighter II self.
Mm-hmm. Is this the origin of the sort of jerk in it Bison, or is that
you know what? I think it
is. It's not that you said it; it's the hand motion too.
Look, yeah. he's posing. I'm sorry, it's a pose he does in some of these clips.
The listeners will luck out on that one. Mm. But yeah, I think that this is the one that they stuck lovingly all the animation frames to his arm movement.
Also, Morrigan, 1994 Morrigan sprite, still here, still working. Don't worry about her. She's doing fine.
She's vibing, you know, in her really like trippy stage.
Right. I think this is probably the first time. This is probably the first layer of Vaseline they've applied to that sprite to sort of make it look a little less edgy on modern screens.
Probably,
it's
yeah.
only going to get worse in Capcom. Sorry, Marvel Capcom 2. It got even more.
All they really needed to do was just like trim down the giant black outline her sprite has, and yeah. she would have looked fine. And they didn't do it in this. They didn't do it in CVS2 or Marvel. They're just like, it's fine. We have all these other sprites we need to animate. We don't have time to mess with this.
Yeah, just put her in there. Who cares?
Yeah.
I think that's honestly why they didn't bother, considering she's, you know, a Darkstalkers character, and they have, like, a lot of frames of animation, even for just, like, getting hit. So I can understand they wanted to prioritize, you know, because the SNK cast, obviously, is all original. So priorities, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lineup-wise, this is a lot safer. You know, the Capcom side includes all the original 12 characters from Street Fighter II. And then a couple extras like Akuma and what have you. The SNK side is a couple surprises. Obviously, you know, Nakoruru is not unprecedented, but it's definitely unexpected given that most of the characters from KOF. Raiden is probably the biggest surprise. I don't think anyone expected Raiden to show up. At least, like, certainly not as Raiden. Like, Big Bear maybe, but no, he's Raiden again.
You know, I guess Wild Ambition had just come out in 1999, and they're like, you know what? This is the Raiden comeback tour. Let's get him back out of that.
I mean, does SNK have an anti-Zangief, I guess? Is Raiden the closest option? That's the only reason I can think that he would be in this game.
Yeah, he's just like a basic pro wrestler character, right. So I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah. It's the closest analog I can think of.
I mean, there are other grapplers in KOF, but...
Sure. They're also mobile.
Yeah. Like, you could do Maxim, but Maxim's not really a different type of guy.
I'm picturing them just throwing Shermie up against Zangief and him just getting completely shredded.
I mean, I'm pretty sure CVS1 was, like, either just after or just before Mark of the Wolves, right?
It was a little after.
Marvel was 99, that's what I was thinking. Because it'd still be too soon for Tisa, because that's the other analog I could think of, but yeah.
Yeah, I imagine this was in development when Mark of the Wolves came out in, what, November 99 or thereabouts.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
And Tisa, Griffin Mask, whatever, would eventually fold into KOF, but not until, I think, what, 2002, 2003? It took a couple
years.
I think it was 2003.
It took some time before they... went Mark of the Wolves and KOF, which doesn't actually make sense, but whatever. It's fine.
It's a different timeline. Don't worry about it.
So, how does the game work? Well, this game work, it's all about the groove. Okay? When you play this game, you start up your character, and it says, okay, what groove do you want? And you have two choices of groove. You've got the Capcom groove and the SNK groove. And what this does is, it basically determines how your gameplay works and the characters you see. Because if you pick the Capcom groove, all the character portraits you're going to see on the screen are from Kinu Nishimura, longtime Capcom artist. If you pick SNK groove, then you see all art from Shinkuro, who of course was traditionally with SNK, but by this point, he had been hired by Capcom. So it's kind of, it's a fun nod to the fact, hey, you know, there's, you know, these characters, you've known these characters for a decade now, man, just go for it. And I think he's still, maybe not a full-time employee, but you still see a lot of Shinkuro in Capcom these days. I know he drew a load screen for fucking Fortnite when they did, when Ryu and Chun-Li joined Fortnite. Excuse my language, but...
He did new art for the Capcom Fighting Collection, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he did the box art.
Yeah, that's Shinkuro art right there, absolutely.
Yeah, I think they sort of, like, dig him out of his crypt every couple of years and throw him some cat. I mean, I don't know what else he could possibly be doing, because they only really hire him for, like, fighting game stuff at Capcom. It's not like Capcom's cranking out a fighting game every year anymore, so...
Didn't he do art for Monster Hunter?
They used to bring him out for, like, other games. I know he did, like, it's almost 20 years ago, but he did most of the key art for, like, the DS port of Resident Evil.
Yes.
There's a couple more I'm thinking of, but after a while, I think from, like, Tatsunoko versus Capcom onwards, they've purely just had him doing fighting game art.
Right. And that was forever ago.
Yeah.
I think he may have actually done some portrait work for Resident Evil 4. I think there's a, like, if you look at the Resident Evil 4 cover, that might be him, honestly.
I think it is. It's kind of got his style.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nishimura, she's the GOAT. And I wish she had done the Capcom character art for the Capcom Groove, because that is just, like, they all look awful. I don't think any of those ones look good, but all the, like, SNK characters in Capcom Groove look immaculate. Just, like, super dynamic, super, like, detailed. Like, she is a master of what she does.
I can't remember if it was CVS 1 or 2. But she actually spoke, because she goes on Twitter sometimes about it. I think she's one of the people in charge of the art account they have on there.
Mm.
I believe, I can't remember if it was the first game or the second, but a lot of the Capcom side art that looks like hers is based on outlines she drew, but was finished by somebody else.
Huh.
I know for 2, she specifically said Ideon, who does like most of the rival school's art, did some of them. She said she focused mostly on like the women for CVS2, and I think she said something about the first game that I can't remember, but if some of them look odd, that's probably why.
I believe that, because Nishimura definitely like goes all in on all the female characters and basically anything she works on, like, oh, you've got a type.
Yeah, I believe the Chun-Li portrait from Capcom SNK1 is like, she's standing there, and like her, like one leg is on the ground, and one leg is completely vertical. I believe is the pose. Like,
I think that's CVS2.
That's in 2.
Yeah. 2. Yeah. Okay,
and well, that's her work.
It's a memorable pose. But yeah, so Capcom Groove, SNK Groove. Again, Capcom Groove is basically Street Fighter Alpha style. You build up meter over time. You have 3 levels. You can choose. You can either use like one level to use some of your meter, or you can use a level 3 super to empty all your meter. And of course, there are moves like, you know, like Akuma's Shingokusatsu, which is, you know, a full meter super. Meanwhile, the SNK version, again, you're holding buttons to charge up. You only have one level. But again, at low, if at low health, you can do infinite supers. And if you're infinite, if you have low health and you charge your meter, you can do an extra big, you know, what they call max super special, which is especially dangerous.
It's a level 3.
But you're at low health, so it's very risky.
Yeah.
God, Capcom Groove just seemed like underpowered to me, because it does not build meter very fast at all. Whereas SNK Groove, you can just hold the button down for like 2 seconds and you've got a full bar. And level 1 supers in this game are so, so good.
Yeah.
Like, they juggle into each other, right?
They can.
Yeah, depending on the character.
This game has some really ridiculous juggles. Like, the classic is sweeping someone as Ryu and then comboing that into Shin Shoryuken and getting the full damage.
Great.
Yeah, just fantastic. It's a very ridiculous system, and Capcom Groove, there's like a bug with some characters where if you hit someone with a heavy attack and they block it, and your next like attack against them is a grab, all the hits of the grab will build meter as though you were connecting a full heavy attack. And that way you can build a lot of meter really, really fast. But that's about it.
Yeah. It's a very funny game, like, to actually play.
I love this game, but it is very dumb.
It very... Benimaru, in particular, has this glitch where he has an original super in this game. It's not, like, in any of the KOFs prior. And if it collides with a projectile at the right time, it disappears, but it still lingers in front of him invisibly. So if you just walk up to, like, the opponent, they'll just get hit and comboed by it. And funnily enough, SNK took that, and that became the basis for his desperation move in, I think, 2002, where he gets one. It's not invisible. It's you can see it there, but, like, it acts the exact same way the glitch does. So I always thought that was pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Benimaru only growing stronger.
He'll never be bad. They'll just always make sure he's good.
They love him.
Except in CVS2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk ratio. Ratio is the other new term that pops up in this game, and it's very important because instead of the traditional games where you're picking, you know, oh, this is a two-player game, it's a three-player game, the ratio is what happens. So each team has a maximum of ratio 4, and each character is assigned a specific number. So some of them are ratio 1, some of them are 2, some of them are even 3, and then some of the hidden characters, like the super bosses, are actually 4, ratio 4 characters up by themselves. So, depending on how long you've been playing the game, you can unlock more characters and unlock access. I'm sure the upcoming collection, I'm sure they're probably all unlocked by default. But whatever the case is, your team can only have up to 4 points, essentially. So, it's up to you. Do you want to have 2 point characters? Do you want to have a 3 character and a 1 character? Do you want to have 4 ratio 1 characters? You're allowed to do this. It's up to you how you want to spread your points. And the downside
round
of this
7 fight.
Yeah. The downside is that the ratio is predetermined. So if the game says your character is ratio 1, then your character is ratio 1, which will put them at a disadvantage because they have less life and deal less damage. And the ratio 4 characters on the other end, of course, deal crazy damage and are very, very fast. Now, it's not like, you know, it's not written in stone. Like, obviously, a ratio 1 can beat a ratio 4. Of course they can. But generally speaking, they're not going to be equal footing most of the time.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, the funny thing is, a lot of the generally considered best characters in the game are ratio 1s, but ratio 1s and 2s. But yeah, you can just kind of gang up on like one ratio 4, and it'll take a lot of doing, but it is doable.
Or you can run the clock because, you know, whoever wins a round is not based on, you know, the point total of all their life, but rather who has more bar on their life bar. And it's obviously ratio 4s can drain a lot of life out from just a couple of hits against like a ratio 1 or 2. But if you end the round with more life on that life bar than the ratio 4 has, they lose the round. And with that, they lose the match because they're flying solo. There's no other character to save them.
I have to wonder if this maybe influenced I have to wonder if this influenced SNK for KOF 2001, because 2001 also had a sort of surprise how many characters do you want to choose system. Like, do you want to have one super character with a bunch of strikers, or do you want to have a full team with only one striker, and that affected your strength of your character? And I wonder if that was influenced by this game at all, maybe. Although I don't know who actually made KOF 2001, because I guess it was like a team that was half Eolith and half SNK play more. I guess that's a story. That's a podcast in itself, 2001. But
yeah.
I think it was mostly Eolith. And I've got the distinct impression from 01 that had a very abbreviated development cycle. So I would not be shocked if they just looked at a KOF 2000 and were like, that's a fun idea. Let's just do that.
Right.
And give Yuri the Shungoku Satsu while we're at it. Also, rip off Akira.
Well, it's, you know, it's pretty obvious at this point that like both companies were looking at each other and like pulling ideas from each other. So that it makes perfect sense if that were to happen that way.
Mm-hmm. I should add that most characters also have an EX version, which have altered mood sets. Not every character does this, but most characters have an EX alternate. There's also a code. I forget how you enter the code, but there's a way to set the game so that everyone is ratio 2, so that you can always play 2-1-2 if that's how you want to play the game. The next game has the ratio select. No. It's set for this game. as far as lineup goes, I don't know. Any other surprises here? I think it's pretty straightforward, as I said.
I feel like Yamazaki's kind of interesting because he's clearly based off of his like Fatal Fury real bout rendition rather than his KOF one.
Yeah. I do like that they included Vice. I think that was a really nice inclusion on their part. But yeah, I think for the most part, it's pretty safe.
And they look great. The SNK characters drawn by Capcom artists is a real treat. And especially at the time, because, you know, you always think in your head, I wish X person would make this game. And you kind of got that in this case. So, like, you know, seeing Kim drawn by Capcom artists, for example, it was a real treat. That, like, I think Geese looks awesome in these games. I think Yamazaki's sort of a bland looking character, but he looks great in these games too. I know it's a little superficial, but just seeing Capcom artists draw these characters was pretty awesome.
I feel like the only real miss was Ryo, because like KOF redesigned Ryo to look super cool.
Yeah.
And this game just has him with like his basic Art of Fighting 1 stance, and he looks like he has a 5 o'clock shadow, but I think it's actually supposed to be shadow. It doesn't really read very well.
Yeah, he doesn't look cool in any way, really. Like none of his normals look like, I don't know, like, again, it's very superficial, and he's fine in these games. He's not a great character, I don't think, but he just looks dopey. Like,
bring back the tiger stance.
That's the word I'd use.
Bingo. Yeah. Especially after all the work that like SNK did to basically make him a killer looking character over time. Like, he's in Bariki 1, like years after the Art of Fighting games are supposed to have ended, and he's like the super boss, right? Or something like that. Like,
I think he's just a regular playable character because he enters. Yeah. Yeah, he enters that tournament as like the Mr. Karate too. So
right. Poor Ryo.
I do like some of the stages this time around. The stages are not necessarily based on other stages. They're just kind of original ideas, but they're sort of vaguely reminiscent of other things. Like Terry has like a train station, but it's not like the Rushmore thing. It's just like, it's just a train station. Like Geese is a big rooftop stage. It's not the exact same stage, but it's what you expect Geese to hang out. M. Bison, Vega, Dictator, whatever. Like he's got a whole like sci-fi thing. And like, there's a big screen behind him that shows all your like the player data going on. It's kind of this neat animation. And once again, you get an original Osaka stage. This time based off of Shinsekai, which is a real neighborhood downtown. And it's unfortunately been in the news lately because of a big fire that destroyed a really cool arcade that was in the neighborhood that I'm really still upset about. Zarigani is based. It's either gone or it's gonna be gone. It's gonna be out of commission for a long time because it was a huge fire that just, yeah, really, really terrible.
Yeah. I think we already talked about how great the final fight stage is because it is probably the standout, but I have to give credit to, there's a stage where you're like fighting at night in front of, I think, a temple or something. There's just like a fire behind you and it outlines the characters and like the sprites will flicker a little bit as though they're being lit by firelight. It looks really cool. The Nakaruru stage in a blizzard looks super cool. And the stage where you're in, I think it's supposed to be London or whatever, but you're fighting outside of an arcade. And if you go too far to the left, you're just like, you enter the arcade and there's like some kids playing behind you. Like there's all sorts of neat touches. This was really like the height, I feel, of Capcom's 2D art extravaganza. I know a lot of people will say Third Strike because it had all the animation frames. But this has such inventiveness to the characters and the stages.
I think my favorite thing about the stages is Capcom actually kind of took a book out of SNK's approach to stages, where every stage has like an animated intro before going into the stage.
Yeah.
So you get stuff like, my personal favorite stage aside from the final fight one is, so it's like the dojo for, it's the Sakazaki dojo and it's like under construction. So like the stage starts and you see like the under construction sign, but it's like rattling because somebody's, you know, hitting it with a jackhammer. And the more you fight on the stage, like the more you sweep somebody and like they fall down, like logs will come from the top of the screen and just like start. Eventually the whole thing collapses. But if you look to the left, there's also like the stage from Street Fighter Alpha 1 where it's like kind of fighting outside like the lawyer friendly Lawsons in the background there. And I always thought that was a really neat touch. I think that's like one of the only stages in the game that takes like an actual SNK and like Capcom location and kind of matches it together. But I've always really enjoyed just the way they approach stages in this game compared to like, I think every other crossover, really.
Hmm. I know there's a stage that is probably supposed to be Tokyo. It's basically like a big car crash, but before the stage starts, it like,
yes.
It like has a few seconds of what looks like a, basically like a racing game. And then, like, there's a crash, and then you're fighting in front of the crash. There's a big fire behind you, and you can see the signs. There's, like, you know, this traffic signs up on, you know, up out of view, and it's just, it looks really neat. Looks really cool.
They even, like, outline the characters on the stage with, like, a little yellowish-orange outline just to show that, yeah, there's a fire going on back there. I love it.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to sort of be the legacy of this game, too, is its presentation. Like, what you were saying a second ago, Jiro, it's like, not a lot of people still sort of play this in tournaments, like not compared to the other game, the next game that we're going to talk about, but like there was a big sort of renaissance of this game showing up on Twitter and stuff like that a year or two ago. Like, remember how good this looked? Why don't we have this anymore? And it's true. It's just a neat looking game.
And the music's great too. Just
yeah.
Everything about this game hits except for the fact that it's, you know, a kind of slight package in terms of actual game mechanics. But, like, it's a lot of fun. I really, really like CVS1.
Yeah, it's a really fun game. It doesn't really have much of a competitive legacy. But the one thing that is kind of fun about it is, like, the best character in the game is an SNK character. Nakaruru, like, if you talk to people that played this game back then, like, they will tell you horror stories about Nakaruru. Like, she pretty much ran that game for the short time. It was
she's a nightmare.
She's just ridiculous in that game. I think nerfing her was, like, one of the big selling points of, I don't know if you guys are going to talk about it, the re-release.
CVS Pro. Pro.
Yeah. They kind of nerf her in that, but she was ridiculous. She was absolutely insane in that game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think the best description I ever saw about Nakaruru in this game, it's like, you know, how most characters have, like, a left-right mix-up. Nakaruru has, like, four ways she can attack you after a mix-up, and you just have to guess. And if you guess wrong, she gets to knock you down again and do it all over again. She was the original Vortex character.
Yeah, that's exactly it, because her forward dash is just a little hop, but she could do that as you're knocked down and switch sides, so she can make it incredibly ambiguous as to what she's going to do once you wake up. And like you said, you guess wrong, you're just in the vortex, you got to guess again. It's insane.
Or she could hop on her bird and come down, because she recovers super fast off the bird. And she gets on the bird super fast. It's incredible. This game is what made me like pick up Nakaruru, because I was a filthy little bastard in high school and was like, yeah, I'll pick the best characters in the game.
Well, since you brought it up, that's a good point. So, a year later, 2001, we get Capcom versus SNK Millennium Fight 2000 Pro, which is arcade and Dreamcast with Naomi again. But also, in 2002, for the PlayStation, there's a period there, not PlayStation 2. They made a 2002 port of the revision of this game for the PS1, which is a very strange choice, because by the time that comes out on PlayStation 1, the sequel to this game is already out in arcades and on the PS2. I don't know. Maybe they had too many discs. Maybe it was a too many disc problem. Like, we gotta sell these discs. Here, quick, put a game in these things.
That PS1 port sucks.
I'm sure.
I almost appreciate the audacity of it, but yeah, it's not great.
But Pro, the basic changes Pro is they add two new characters. They add Joe Higashi on the SNK side. They add Dan Hibiki on the Capcom side. Those two are the canon winners of the tournament. So when you play the original game, every ending has this sort of newscast, and they tell you that Joe and Dan won the tournament. You're like, oh, were they even in this game? They weren't in the game, but they're in the pro version.
Yeah.
And then it's a rebalancing. And Kevin, you had a note here about the rebalancing because the grab glitch.
Yeah, there is a GameFAQs file about like all the known changes between this and CVS1. But like the short version is that they did make Nakaruru have a little more recovery on her moves, so she can't just bully you endlessly. She's still super good, and I think that just is a testament to how good she was originally. They removed the grab glitch that let Capcom Groove build meter faster, but they tweaked it a little bit so it does build meter a little bit quicker. They tweaked how the ratios give everyone health and damage output a little bit, so the ratio 3s and 4s can fight a little bit better, and the ratio 1s can fight a little worse. And yeah, they did a bunch of tweaks to every character, really. It's a laundry list. I do suggest taking a look at that, if only because, for whatever insane reason, this is the version they're reissuing on the Capcom Fighting Collection too, and not the one that people actually played. Because like you said, this came out in 2001 in the arcade, like 2 or 3 months before CVS2 came out. Nobody touched this game.
Yeah, I think by the time I heard of this game, I had already heard the sequel was coming. So, like, I was importing a lot of games. I had a lot of disposable income. But I was like, I'm just going to wait for the part two. I don't need this pro version. I don't need a half step.
Yeah.
It's just so weird that it came out on the PS1 at that point. Like, if any developer knows that the PlayStation should not be running games like this on the PlayStation, it was Capcom. Like, what are you guys doing? But what do I know? I don't work for Capcom. And talk about a power imbalance, too, between, like, the new characters. Like, Dan and Joe Higashi. Like, I know they're both supposed to be sort of joke characters, but, like, Joe is traditionally pretty strong, and Dan's traditionally pretty lousy in every game. Like, it just seems like a funny, I don't know.
I think it's because, like, Joe is generally, like, when they put him in, like, Fatal Fury games, he's, like, the goofy, not serious protagonist character. And I'm assuming that's why they threw him in with Dan, who is absolutely not a serious character at all. But it's still, like, a very strange pairing.
Yeah, that's always what I thought. Because especially in KOF, where they kind of play up Joe's goofiness a little bit more than in Fatal Fury, I always thought, yeah, it makes sense, I guess, to pair him up with Dan. I mean, I don't know if they would ever, like, you know, pair him up with, like, you know, Leo, but, you know, considering what he's a parody of. But, yeah, Joe checks out. That makes sense.
Joe's mouth is massive in this game. It's so weird.
they really had fun with his mouth and, like, Ryu's mouth.
Yeah, it's bonkers. Like, you can fit that whole sub sandwich that Terry's eating in Joe's gaping maw.
We'll just, like, fold it up and just, like, neatly pack it in there.
Right. Sorry, that was a weird aside. Anyway.
Speaking of weird asides, like, you mentioned Dan teaming up with people and how it's weird, but, like, that's something I forgot about the Neo Geo Pocket game, is that if you're playing one of the team modes and you pick specific character squads, you'll get, like, a special team name. And I remember Dan has one with Ryo, and I think Yuri as well.
He has one with Yuri, yeah.
Huh.
Another cute little touch that SNK put in.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like SNK was that offended by Dan, you know? Like, clearly it was a swipe against them, but I think even in Matt Leone's oral histories, like, they just seemed like, oh, that's, all right, whatever, Senpai noticed me, and and that's where we are. So it seems like they were pretty cool about the whole thing.
They went out of their way to include Dan in all their versions of the crossovers, so
yeah,
they must have been.
Oh, yeah.
Well, mouth discord aside, I guess it's time to talk about Capcom vs. SNK 2, Mark of the Millennium 2001, a.k.a. Capcom vs. SK2 Millionaire Fighting 2001 in Japan, which I think is kind of a funnier name, because who's a millionaire? Not many of these characters are millionaires, but whatever. The point system, I think, has been changed to put more points on the board. Good for them. And this time around, again, Naomi Arcade, still on Dreamcast, although I think the Dreamcast version never comes to America, because at this point, Dreamcast is dead. But also many home ports, which we'll get to in a minute. So this is definitely the bigger one, the bigger of the two games, three if you count Pro.
One of the first crossplay games ever, too, actually. Mm-hmm. Dreamcast PS2 version had crossplay in Japan. I don't know if it was the first one, like, ever. I think that might have been, like, a Dreamcast racing game that had, like, PC and Dreamcast crossplay, but I think it was the first console-to-console crossplay game.
Yeah, I think Dreamcast also had, like, a Quake arena crossplay with PC, but yeah, console-to-console, and it's funny because up until, like, a couple days ago, honestly, folks, just the common wisdom was that, like, oh yeah, the PS2 version runs a little bit faster than Dreamcast, and I always thought that was funny, because it's like, well, they had crossplay, so, like, how would that have manifested? And it turns out someone finally tested it, and they're like, no, both these games run at the exact same speed, like a tick or two faster than the arcade board. So,
Yeah, that tracks, because, yeah, most Naomi ports ran just slightly faster on Dreamcast. So, yeah. And the PS2 version was always generally considered to be pretty decent. So that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. So for this new game, they've done a lot of changes up front. First of all, every stage now is a complete 3D background, kind of like Marvel Capcom 2, but the characters remain 2D sprites in the foreground. I personally enjoy this approach, at least because for this game, they put a lot of thought into, like, okay, what can we do with this thing? Where can we make these matches take place? And their answers were, we got some wild ideas. We're going to go to, like, the Arctic Circle. We're going to go to, like, the middle of the desert. We're going to go to, you know, there's multiple Osaka locations that aren't, like, real Osaka locations, but, like, you're near Osaka Castle. I think there's a stage where you fight on top of Osaka Castle. And there's one where, like, Osaka's burning and the castle's in the background. Like, it's really, they had a lot of ideas here that I really appreciate. And I think in general, the audiovisual work here is a real step up. I don't know. By all means, shout me down here. But I think in general, it's a big level up from what, like, definitely, there are some really great stages in Capcom SK1, CVS1. But CVS2, I feel like, you know, I always think of the Aomori stage, where you got, like, the two giant, like, parade floats.
Yes.
Of Haomaru.
Yes.
And E Honda, like, facing off one another. And, like, they dance back and forth throughout the fight. Like, it's really, amazing.
Did you see the video that came out, like, a year or two ago about that stage? That's like, oh yeah, there's also all these other floats in the background that you just barely see, like Bishamon and Kyoshiro, and there's another one who I'm blanking on. I'm like, wow, that's some interesting deep cuts from Capcom, like, put into positions where you will never see them unless you're, like, very much looking for them.
I think as far as presentation goes, one of my favorite things is that they kind of, like, the first game kind of, like, does the same thing, but they double down on the framing device of it being, like, a news station covering all of these matches.
Yeah.
So you kind of get, like, you know, the little transition is, like, a kind of news network eye catch with, like, you know, the yellow diamonds and whatnot. I always thought that was a really, really cool way to kind of frame, you know, the events of a fighting game. I mean, nothing's really happening in the game story-wise or anything, but I still think little touches like that are important.
Yeah, it's got a unified look that the previous game didn't really have, and I think that really gives it. Like, if a lot of people kind of look at the Persona games as having a sort of similar sort of unified look to them, like CVS2 really does that kind of early on, like before Persona 3, we'll say. Yeah, and, you know, a lot of tournament organizers and stuff like that like to call back to, like, the yellow diamonds when they promote tournaments and things like that. So, like, that sort of unified look has persisted over the years too. It's very, very cool to see.
You know,
yeah, I love this UI. That's for sure. I love it. I think it's really cool.
I was gonna say, I did years ago. I won a tournament called Live and Let Die. And one of the games they had in this was
Live and CVS Let Die.
One of the games they had was CVS2, and you know, they had the diamonds. They had True Love Makin' on their, like, interstitials. It was cute, and, you know, only four people signed up for CVS2, but dang it, I won.
That tournament was still 6 hours long.
I beat the pants off those other three. Hey, hey, if you have enough setups, this game doesn't run any slower than KOF. It's just, you know, I was there in the time when you would run a bracket on one arcade machine and you would be there for 10 hours. That was a miserable time.
Yeah, I remember going to locals. And whenever, like, we would want to, like, people would rise up and want to play CVS2, like, the TOs would just, like, look at each other and just groan, like, oh, fine. You guys can have that one PlayStation over there. Just, you know, just whenever you're finished, you're finished.
just get three setups. That's all you need for a CVS2 bracket. I can say this having been a part of many of them over the past several years. We've winnowed it down. The formula has been cracked.
But yeah, Kevin, you said it, and I sang it at the top of the show. The background music for the London stage, This Is True Love We're Making, I feel like that should be at least as famous as Gonna Take You for a Ride. I am bitter. I'm bitter that more people don't know the song, because it is a goddamn jam and a half. It is fantastic. Put that on 10 hours. I'll do it. I'll do my homework.
Someone found recently, like, all of the, like, sample albums that this game pulled from.
Sure.
And, yeah, someone found the original sample of True Love Making, and or all the original samples. It's fascinating how they put them together.
That was Capcom's thing at this period, though. Like, they were making crazy sampled soundtracks, and That's why we're still talking about them, I guess.
SNK, too, because I remember There was, up until, like, maybe a year ago, nobody knew what the sample was for the KOF 98 intro, where it's the guy talking, and then it, like, kind of just, like, fizzles out in the static. Yeah. Somebody found it recently, and it was from, like, a really obscure, like, sample library from, like, 97 or something. It was nuts, but I think it was just a Japanese development thing at the time, just to use sample libraries a lot for your compositions. Because I know the New York stage in CVS2 uses the same exact sample as, like, a level from Sonic Adventure.
It does.
Randomly. But it's very clear. Like, if you know both games and you know both tracks, then you can point it out instantly. Yeah. Listen closely, approach me, sucker close me. Don't try to treat me like greater than toast me, impossible. I cut a sucker in small chunks, make more rhymes than Michael Jordan makes slams. I'm low,
So I know a few minutes ago we talked about CVS1 playing it safe, but CVS2, this is definitely Freaks Rise Up territory. They're like, okay, we had a game, the game sold well, here's part two, and we're opening the floodgates, let's get weird. So right off the bat, oh yeah, your grooves? You like the grooves? Okay, now there's six goddamn grooves, okay? Now there's CAP and SNK. Pick your fave. Or on the home version, there's a groove edit mode. Make your own goddamn groove. You think you're so good at it. Go ahead. And they're like, they're wild. You know, like, obviously some of them are very similar. Like the C groove is basically the Capcom groove. And the S is basically SNK. The N is sort of 98 advance mode. But then, like, the K groove was like Samurai Showdown with like a rage meter. And P is like, it's kind of like Third Strike because they introduced parrying, but also there's only one level of super. Like, it's we like A, and A is basically V-ism from Street Fighter Alpha 3, which is the weirdest one.
it's super good. What I find fascinating about the K groove one is that they're mashing up Samurai Showdown's meter system with Mark of the Wolves' Just Defend system.
Yes,
and evidently that seemed to go over really well, because when SNK released Samurai Showdown in 2019, they basically used that as their system, because there are just defends in that game, as there have been in basically all of their recent games, and are about to be in the next Fatal Fury. And in that game, you can use them to build meter as well, without taking damage, just like K-Groove.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
This is Capcom's, this is their kitchen sink kind of approach to design, and this is not the last time they'll do something like this, but this is the most emblematic of it. Like, we're just going to throw everything that you want into this game, everything that you've previously done, it's all in here. And just like Third Strike on the Dreamcast. Like, if you want to break it yourself, we're giving you the tools to do that with the EX grooves, which is pretty awesome. It's pretty smart on Capcom's end because, like, you know, one thing that we didn't really talk about too much is that, you know, both companies were not doing great at this point. That's one of the reasons that probably this crossover happened, because like SNK was going through bankruptcy. Like, the fighting game boom was long over for Capcom, and a lot of these games were sort of on life support at this point. So they're like, you know what, we're kind of doing this because we want to get new people into it, sure, but like, we're also really doing this for the fans. They've stuck with us for this long. Here's everything. And that is basically this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you could connect this with like also Marvel Capcom 2, just kind of like, here we go. We have all the stuff. Please enjoy this. You know, they didn't say it out loud, but like, we're kind of not going to do this for a while, which is what led to our whole episode we did about, you know, the fighting game doldrums of the early 2000s. Cause like, you know, you have these games coming out, and then there's a period of, you know, about 6, 7, 8 years where Capcom is making very few fighting games at all, and SNK is not making anything because they're on bankrupt, and, you know, other companies are kind of filling in, but not on the same scale, of course. So, yeah, that gives this game an extra life because there's really nothing to replace them for a long time.
Yeah, this game feels to me, both at the time and looking back at it now, it's like the celebration of the fighting game boom of the 90s. And like, this is really putting down the marker. It's like, all right, this is the end of that. I hope you all had fun. Here's way too much stuff that's going to make it hell for anyone to pick up this game who's not already into fighting games. But if they're into it, like, boy, oh, howdy, do we have plenty for you.
Mm-hmm. I remember when we were doing the research for the CVS episode with like CVS 2 or Marvel vs. Capcom 2, like some of the interviews those guys were doing that had been recently translated by like Shmuplations and places like that were saying, you know, the developers were like, there are no bad ideas, just throw it all in there. And that is definitely this too. Like, there are really no bad ideas in this. And you know, for good or for ill, like, not all of this stuff really panned out. Like, Kevin, I think, is going to probably really latch onto the P or the P groove here, be like, it sucks, Third Strike's awful. But some some stuff worked better than others, but like, it's just cool that they tried anyway. Then, and because this was really putting a period on a whole era at this point, that they just tossed it all in there. I think it's great.
I think CVS 2 in particular feels like the logical endpoint of a through line that kind of starts with Alpha 3. I'm glad you mentioned like kitchen sink fighting game design, because Alpha 3 definitely kind of feels like the start of that with like all of the isms. And then you get the console port, and there's like even more secret ones with just wild stuff. And then you get to Marvel 2, where it's like nearly everyone that's been in the game. Then here's this whole system where like half the game is team building with assists and whatnot. And then you get to CVS 2, and here's like every major mechanic Capcom and SNK have put in the fighting game all mashed together. Here's a couple dozen characters, have fun. And it just feels like what Capcom was kind of building to, as far as fighting game design goes. It's really, like you said, it's a good punctuation of like that fighting game boom.
Yeah.
So part of the work in revamping the system for CVS 2 is that they've changed the ratio system, in that there's still 4 ratio points, but now the characters no longer have a predetermined ratio. So you pick your roster and you decide who's ratio 4 and who's ratio 2, and you do it yourself. So again, the system is still basically the same thing. Like, do you want to have one strong guy, or do you want to have a bunch of weaker guys? But you get to choose who's strong and who's weak. It's all up to you. You assign the points yourself. The only downside is you can no longer have a quartet. Quartets are out. So the max size of any team is 3, but that can be, you know, a 2 and a 1 and a 1, or 2 2s, or a 3 and a 1, or just a 4. You want to have a beast? Go ahead, make a beast.
I feel like that was them throwing a bone to arcade operators who didn't want to have CVS1 matches going on for 12 minutes long. I'm like, here, let's just trim this down to a nice, you know, regular 6 minutes.
And expanding the roster, they added a lot of new characters. Now, again, some of these characters are, you know, pre-existing sprites, but most of them are not. Most of them are new sprites. You know, certainly all the new SK characters are Capcom drawing SK characters for the first time. Some of them are borrowed from, you know, some of these new characters are borrowed from Alpha, but not all of them. Who wants to talk about their favorite additions to this roster? Go ahead. Just go for it.
Oh, Well, go ahead.
Kevin's got a
this
sticker?
This game, I got a sticker from a friend of mine. Yeah, Hibiki Takane from Last Blade 2, which, you know, not the most, I wouldn't say it's most the high-profile SNK fighting game that they've done, and she was not the most high-profile character in it. But for whatever reason, Capcom was like, this character right here, we want the swordswoman who may or may not end this game as a bloodthirsty maniac. And we want to slap her in our crossover game and make her so friggin' cool that, like, 20 years later, SNK is going to have to bring her into the new Sam Show game because she's, like, the only Last Blade character anyone gives a crap about anymore. Sorry, Kaede and Yuki and all the rest. Like, this game made her, and I think this game made Rock Howard as well. Because...
yeah.
He sucked so bad at Mark of the Wolves, but he's so cool in this game. Like, and like the custom intro with Geese Howard, so cool.
Yeah, Capcom, they really found some good deep cuts here. Like, just like if you're looking at this list, it's really head scratching because like they brought in Toto from Art of Fighting 1, who super sucks. And SNK for years were like getting like they introduced a Toto's daughter as a character for like all of, you know, if there was going to be a character like that, it was her. So why'd they choose him? That just seems like such a head scratcher to me. And I had not played Mark of the Wolves before playing this. So that was my first experience with Rock Howard. And I was like, this guy kicks ass. I want to use him all the time. And like, little did I know that he was in a different game prior to this, but even still on the Capcom side, I think that there's some really great deep cuts too that I wish that they would still do stuff like this. Eagle, and we're going to talk about him in a second, I'm sure, but like Maki from Final Fight 2, I just thought that was the greatest thing ever when this came out, and I don't like using her really in this game, but like it's cool that she's here and she talks relentless shit, and I think that's hilarious. But you know, Rolento's on the roster. They pulled him from the Alpha games. That was like an easy get. But like Kyosuke from the Rival Schools games and the other Rival Schools characters come in for his level 3. Just, I love when companies kind of like cherry pick those deep cuts. I think it's great. But Maki is actually best girl, not Hibiki.
Whoa.
Hands up.
Whoa.
I was actually about to... I mean, I like Hibiki. She's actually Wagani in the Last Blade, but Maki was going to be my pick, too. That's just a really good pick. Mm-hmm. There's even some lore about how she got into the game, because it was not actually supposed to be Maki initially. Right. It was supposed to be Lin Kudasawa from Alien vs. Predator, but they don't own that character, because that's technically... Well, now it's Disney, but it was Fox then, and they couldn't get clearance for her. So... the next idea was they'll put Maki in, but they'll give her Lin's moveset. And then they realized that doesn't really work. We'll just make Maki her own original character. So that's how we got her. There was another character that was supposed to be in too, but they shot it down pretty early because they thought she was too niche for this game, which is saying a lot. Rain from Plasma Sword was tossed around as a pick for this game, but they thought that was just way too niche. Which, I mean, I guess that's honestly pretty fair, but this game's roster, I just love the deep cuts. Toto is the one that just still makes me go, wow. Has he even been playable in anything past this? In, like, anything?
No.
No, right? Yeah. No.
They just, have never brought
it's
him
It's just artifining one in this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So weird. So weird.
And, like, the Chang and Choi mashup.
Yeah.
I love how they implemented
that. They're one
character. Just so good.
That, yes.
I want to say Toto was so out there because I feel like he showed up as a striker in 2000, KOF 2000, but he's not even named. He's literally called Unknown because, like, we forgot right. This guy exists.
I think so, yeah.
Because he sucks so bad.
The man has
and
one
like
move.
I said earlier, his daughter kind of superseded him after a while, so.
Yeah, she, I think she has, like, an ongoing story where she's trying to find her dad, so I think that's why they just never put him in anything. But it's going to be really funny when they do this new Art of Fighting game and Toto is not there, but Kasumi is.
So among the new characters, you mentioned John. We talked about Eagle. Eagle is from Street Fighter 1, which is already a pretty deep cut because he hadn't been in anything since Street Fighter 1. And this is, you know, this is 2001. So Street Fighter 1 is what, like 14, 15 years old at this point. And in bringing Eagle back, someone, I've been trying to find research on this, but I don't know reasons. But someone decided, you know what, Eagle? I think Eagle is gay. And you don't get this in the English version because English version basically simplifies the text. Like,
oh, I know where this is going. This is
CVS1. CVS1 had some of this too, but CVS2 had even more of this where, like, lots of characters have specific win quotes against specific people, you know? Juro, I know you've done a lot of stuff on your channel about the Marvel games and how certain characters mouth off to certain people, and, like, there's all sorts of win quotes and all this stuff. And that gets preserved in the English. In the English version of Capcom SK2, that's gone. Everyone basically has generic quotes.
Yeah.
Eagle does not. Eagle has very specific quotes, and the things he says to women and men strongly imply that he is gay.
Even, and specifically some of the younger men, like yes. Rock and Kiyosuke, his win quotes against them are wild.
Yeah. It's I mean, it's very heavily, you know, it's innuendo-laden. You know, I would say, like, when he talks to Cammy, like, literally, you translate literally what he says to Cammy, it's like, I'm not interested in you, and he calls her Ojo-san, which is, like, you know, a very polite way to call, like, a woman you don't know. But it's also, like, you can interpret that as saying, I'm not interested in women, because, you know, Japanese doesn't really plurals. It's like, oh, Ojo-san, ikyomi-nai, like, well, I'm not interested in you, ladies. Or he tells Morgan, like, oh, don't flirt with me, Morgan, it's useless. Like, don't ask stupid questions. You know, it's pretty obvious what he wants to say, and that gets cut for the English version, which is kind of a shame, because that's like, you're bringing a character back for the first time in a decade, and you're giving him an actual personality, and you're creating a gay character, which is like, are there any other gay characters in 2001 in any video game? It's a short list, if any. Like, really short.
Yeah, not unless they were like parody characters, like the a lot of, like, the wrestlers or the shopkeepers in the Shadow Hearts games.
Sure, kind of thing, yeah.
Where it was super icky.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know if necessarily, is this supposed to be a joke? Because Eagle doesn't seem like a joke. He just seems Yeah, he seems like a fancy gentleman who happens to like other gentlemen.
Yeah.
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 Was it like that when in his appearance for in Alpha 3 Upper? Did they, like, mess with his win quotes?
He has some, he has some quotes in Alpha 3 that are also flirtatious. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Upper, yeah, an upper. Like, he's an upper, right? Because he came, upper comes
he's
after
in
this.
Max.
Oh, he's in Max?
Alpha 3 Max, yeah.
Okay.
Well, because it's weird because Upper has, like, the regular Naomi arcade release, and then there's the Game Boy Advance version, and that's technically the first version that he got into.
Okay.
And they call that Upper, but the first, like, traditional version of the game that isn't, like, on a platform that isn't, like, compromised is Alpha 3 Max, or Double Upper, I think it's called in Japan. And yeah, I think he still has a few of those one quotes there.
Hmm.
In Japanese.
Also, Maki is there being...
Maki's in there.
Yeah.
Completely overpowered.
Anyway, it's also relevant to the conversation because the Street Fighter 3 Alpha Upper is also in this upcoming collection. So you can, I guess if you want to change the language options, you can see the quotes for yourself. I've not found a lot of English language documentation on this online. Most of it's kind of like... Because even me, like, you know, 20 plus years ago, I barely spoke any Japanese, even though I was studying at the time. And so somehow I heard about Eagle might be gay now, but, like, I didn't really think much about it. And let's be honest, it was 2001, so I was probably, you know, more than a little homophobic. But, you know, now that I'm looking into it and I can read the quotes for myself, I'm kind of really interested. So I hope that someone can do a deep dive or, I don't know, God forbid, interview someone and, like, find out what the story is. Because it's fascinating to me that they would go this far. Because it's pretty overt, you know? It's pretty overt in Japanese.
If I ever get a chance... Neoji Ishizawa is the guy that I think led this game. And one of these days, like, someone's going to have to sit him down and talk to him about a bunch of different characters. Because I bet he's got a lot of things to say. And I don't think he's really with Capcom anymore. So he probably would be willing to talk.
Yeah, He left Capcom a while ago. I think he was, like, one of the main leads on Samurai Showdown, like, the last one.
Because
I know he went to SNK, but I think he left SNK after that, too. But, yeah, I think it'd either be him or Itsuno you'd probably want to talk to about that, because I think Itsuno directed CVS, too, as well.
Hmm.
Any other roster commentary, or should we move on to the home ports?
I'll just add that there's three things that are very strange to me. They had Yuen and Chun-Li, and they redrew Chun-Li to look like her Third Strike version and changed up her move list, and I feel like her voice, they redid all of her lines. The other one that really strikes me as bizarre is they redid Cammy's voice lines from CVS1 with an actress who absolutely cannot speak English for crap. That's the nicest way I can put it. She sounds like a 5-year-old trying to babble through all of her lines. And I'm like, this is uncomfortable.
I guess my only other roster comment is I love that Kyosuke is in. It's terrible that he kind of sucks. But I do like that he's the only character in the game with like a proper launcher and air combo system. Hmm. He can do Rival School's air combos, which is nice. They suck, but it's nice.
Oh, you know what? That reminds me that like for the SNK grooves, they have running instead of like the little dashing like Capcom.
Oh, yeah.
And that affects how Morgan plays, too, because it lets her do Darkstalker's style like aerial drops from her dash. Or from her brother,
right,
rather.
Yeah.
So she can cross up, and she hits her Darkstalker's chain combos, and I think Maki gets her Final Fight chains as well. So, like, they did some really cute things in there to make characters play like their source material.
And I think that's probably the biggest part of this game that we're maybe not talking about. Like, competitively, some of these characters are sort of made for specific grooves. So when it comes to, like, team composition, a lot like, again, what we talked about in the Marvel vs. Capcom 2 episode is that, like, you know, you have to start thinking in terms of team composition, not necessarily like if you want to play it competitively, I just like these characters and I'll just pick this groove because it makes sense. Like, no, you're thinking of like these characters work best in this kind of groove and this is the way I'm going to play the game, which is sort of a deeper layer for like, you know, people that really want to learn this stuff, but there's just so much in this game the toolbox is so big that, like, when I first played this, I was like just blown away by A, how many characters were in it, and B, what you could do with all these grooves that, like, it's just fun to sort of mash buttons in this game and screw around. There's a lot to do in it. It's a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm. It's a fighting game sandbox, pretty much.
Yeah.
There's just so much to experiment with. It doesn't even matter if, like, the groove, you know, your chosen character, you know, the groove you choose for them isn't great. It's still kind of fun to just look at what their options are. Mm-hmm. And just seeing what you can do with it. It's just the, like I said, just really fun game to press buttons in.
You know, if you're going to talk about competitive play for this, I do have to bring up the role canceling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this has been like a very big, I think it's something that scares away people who are interested in CVS2 because they realize like, oh, here's a glitch where you can cancel the startup of a role into a special move, but for, you know, whatever reason, that special move will retain the invincibility, but also throw vulnerability of that role. So you have these situations where a character can blow through a level 3 super with, you know, a fireball or whatever. And some characters can take much better advantage of this than others. It's a part of the game. It's been a part of the game since it was discovered in, like, December 2001. And
I like that you know the month.
I was there, Gandalf, when the will of men fell. But you know, when they did these later ports of the game to the GameCube and Xbox, which I assume we'll get to momentarily, they took that out entirely, and that sort of like created the schism where people who had been playing the heck out of the arcade version and like the PS2 and Dreamcast, they didn't really want to get in too deep to this revised version. And I think that's still true even today. Like, people will just write off these later ports as not a serious version of CVS2 because there's no role cancels.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny thing with Capcom fighting games in particular. When there's like home revisions or even like arcade board revisions of games where they rebalance things, almost nobody ever wants to like mess with them competitively because they just change something that they find fundamental to the meta. A good example I can think of with the Marvel vs. Capcom collection is X-Men vs. Street Fighter, because there were three revisions of that game, and the third one really took out, not all of it, like, it's still a pretty silly game overall, but a lot of the things people could do in that game with certain characters were taken out, And people were not really happy about that because I think it's the second version that's generally seen as the competitive standard, but you only get that third version in the Marvel collection. Alpha 3 Upper is another one, which I'm kind of surprised it's in the collection, but that one took out like Alpha 3 has like crouch cancel combos where you can cancel like if you crouch after juggling somebody for whatever reason, it keeps the opponent in hit stun. So you can just do the absolute silliest stuff in V-ism with that. And Alpha 3 Upper took it out. And that game is not really like loved competitively at all, like anywhere, not even in Japan. So yeah, CVS2 is just another one of those cases where people just didn't really like the changes, and it has its fans, you know, and there's other merits to EO, specifically that I think P-Groove got buffed, if I'm not mistaken. Which
added in super cancels.
Yes,
which
yes.
It helps it significantly competitive.
But yeah, that's just how it tends to go for a lot of fighting game revisions.
Talk about that for a brief moment here, because yeah, this game came home to basically all the consoles that were available at the time, and the Dreamcast port and PS2 port came first. A little bit later were the GameCube and Xbox ports, and those were rebranded as Capcom versus SNK2 EO. Now, it's not a Michael Jackson thing. EO stands for Easy Operation. And the idea was that these home versions, and I think this is part of also because of the spirit of the time. Again, fighting games were not as popular as they used to be. The arcade scene was dying out. So I think this was some kind of like, we need to find a way to get new fans on these games. So here is an optional control scheme that makes these games a little less harder to like parse, and also to make it easier to control on a, you know, a controller, which is not an arcade stick. And the big thing for this sort of EO stuff is that all the punches and kicks were now moved to like the shoulder buttons. And you're holding, much like the pocket game, you hold the button down to make stronger attacks, and you can map, or no, it is mapped. All like the super and special moves are mapped to like the right stick, like the C stick in GameCube and the right stick in Xbox. And like, if you imagine a pie chart, if you push the right stick in a certain direction in a certain, with certain force, you can do different levels and different strengths of super moves.
I'm pretty sure they like actually show you a pie chart in the in like the config menu for it. Yeah.
And it's pretty wild as a concept, and I don't know if this won them any more fans, but like, again, it is optional. You don't have to do that. You can play it with a regular controller and just map all your buttons out. But it is it's pretty radical at the time to say, okay, here's our recent arcade game and here's a completely new way to play it if you want to try it.
And I kind of get it, because this was an era where, you know, arcade sticks for home consoles were not easy to come by, and they usually kind of sucked. So having something that's more controller-friendly made sense. And, you know, Capcom's been experimenting with that for years and years, so I get it. I didn't like it, but I get it.
I feel as if this is made specifically for the GameCube controller, because, like, that just looking at it, that is clearly not made for a 2D fighting game.
Yeah.
But it's like they over-engineered it to the point where it seems more complex to me to play the EO version than it would be to just with a 6-button layout. I don't know. Like, I can't imagine this sold particularly well for either for really any of the consoles. Like, I kind of wonder, but I don't really know for sure.
Well, I know for me personally, I actually had the Xbox version, but I had it for a really silly reason. And kind of relevant to why it might not have sold well. So there, you know, Xbox used to do like the demo discs that they would bundle with like magazines and whatnot. CVS2 was one of the demos they put out. The thing is, and it's the Japanese version of the game, but I guess somebody at Capcom screwed up. It's the full game minus online.
No way.
And once everybody figured that out, it was just a mad dash to get that specific issue. I can't remember if it was an Xbox magazine or just some promotional magazine for something. But it's the entire game. And the funny thing about it is that it's even the build on the disc is actually a little bit better than the final build, because the final build has a glitch. It's like a weird audio glitch where if you do like a finest KO on somebody with like a specific move with, I think, Evil Ryu or Akuma, there's a sound effect that plays and it just keeps persisting for the rest of the match. It got so bad that, like, if you go on, like, the Internet Archive, like, Japanese website for the game, there's, like, a little thing at the bottom of Capcom, like, acknowledging that glitch, but it's not in the demo version. So, like, in some ways, it's a more polished build. But once I learned about that, that's how, like, everybody I knew played the game that didn't already have it on, like, PS2. They just got the demo disc for Xbox and played it that way.
You know, I'll throw that out there that thanks for mentioning that it was only offline, because the Xbox version was the first fighting game with online play in the U.S. that, you know, you didn't have to go through some awful emulator like Kylera to run.
Yeah. So
it wasn't great online play, but it existed. And let me tell you, at the time, that was all we needed.
Yeah, this and the Street Fighter Anniversary Collection, right? Like, you could technically play Third Strike online, but you didn't want to.
Yeah.
Anyway, as part of the upcoming collection, you can choose. They have the arcade original for CVS2, but you can also play the EO version if you want to play it. So, it's again, totally optional, so I guess someone must have asked for this, you know? It's still there. Someone must have asked for this.
I'm wondering how they're doing that. I wonder if they're just taking, like, the arcade version and just kind of, like, backporting the balance changes. So. Because as far as I know, EO didn't get an arcade release.
No.
So,
I think that's what they're doing. They already said that it doesn't have the EO, like, control scheme. So it's just, like, the balance tweaks.
So it's probably just, like, you know, the P groove buff, you know, no roll canceling for the people that don't want that. That makes sense. And, I mean, like, these collections in particular, I think the lead programmer for them is like somebody that's been at Capcom for a while. And I think they even did like the Street Fighter Alpha collection for PS2, which just has like a ton of like really crazy customizable options. It's kind of weird. So it doesn't shock me that they're doing something like it for this.
And you never know, because like Capcom got bullied to put stuff back into the Marvel re-releases, right? So like they took out the Juggernaut glitch.
Yeah.
So they mm-hmm. I mean, if there's something that's not in there that enough people are going to get up in arms over, they might just wind up putting in there down the road anyway.
Yeah, I think the Juggernaut thing in particular might have actually been an accident. Because Marvel 2, like anybody that's like dug into the code for the game, Marvel 2 is kind of a mess. Because
you don't
it's built.
Say.
It, I mean, more than just surface level, because it's built on top of like all of the CPS2 Marvel games. And anytime it gets ported to other platforms, there's always just really weird unintended like bugs and glitches that differ depending on the platform. And the Juggernaut glitch is like one of the few that's actually remained in each and every port. But some ports just like if you fix one thing, another thing might not
something
work.
Something else cracks, yeah.
And somebody had dug into the code and they had surmised that with Juggernaut, because of how the glitch works, I think it has something to do with how the game handles memory addresses. And probably fixing that one Gambit glitch, which also works for a similar reason, probably like stopped the Juggernaut glitch from working. And I do remember was it Digital Eclipse or Backbone? I can't remember. Who did the PS3 port of Marvel 2. I remember them saying that the Gambit glitch got fixed there on accident. They were just kind of tweaking things, and one day the Gambit glitch just stopped working.
Huh.
So with this, they took out the Gambit glitch for the collection as well, so it was probably just they were fixing things, and they just accidentally took it out. So, again, that same programmer, I think, also worked on Marvel 2 that's still working on the collection, so they probably had to know how to just get it in there without breaking anything else. So that was really nice of them.
Actually, it's good that you're bringing this up, because I was going to ask you guys, like, why does this game work so well on PS2 versus Marvel versus Capcom 2, which is a hot, stinky mess on PlayStation 2? Like, I mean, that you basically answered it, but
yeah I think it's got to be it, right?
That's pretty much it. I mean, I think, because I know CVS1 is the same engine as Marvel 2, because there's, like, leftover assets if you go into the code, but I think CVS2 is mostly a refresh. I know there's some data in that game that, like, I think some hitbox data and, like, frame data were, like, actually, like, copy-pasted from Alpha 3 for some characters. But overall, I'm from what I understand, it's not as much of a mess as Marvel 2, code base wise. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think the fact CVS 2 was like coming out the same time as the Dreamcast version, as opposed to a couple of years after the fact, like they were kind of working on them simultaneously. They could make sure everything lined up. But basically what you're saying is we can bully Capcom into giving us vanilla CVS-1 on this collection.
That's exactly what we're saying.
We probably can.
Get your letter writing campaign started.
We want busted knock.
They're here in Osaka. I can drive down there. If I have to drive down there, I can drive down there. I'll find it.
Don't make them promises that you can't keep. I mean...
We are approaching the 2-hour mark here, but we do have to talk about one more game, which we already mentioned a little bit back in episode 610, where we talked about the fighting game Doldrums, but it is the end of the series, basically. SNK versus Capcom, SVC Chaos, which probably reflects its development history. So, it landed in 2003 on the Neo Geo. Now, the Neo Geo expired in 2004, so this is one of the last Neo Geo games. And at this point, as we mentioned before, SNK has gone bankrupt and come back from bankruptcy, but it's still, you know, it's on life support, basically. So they couldn't do a extravaganza the scale of, you know, Capcom SNK 2. And I think that shows in the game. Not that the game is, you know, cheaply made, but just, like, obviously things ran out. Like, something ran out somewhere. Ran out of time, ran out of money. I don't know. But it does feel... less, in my opinion, like, and at the time, as a huge SNK fan, like, I was super excited for this game, and I couldn't help sit down and play it. And I'm like, this doesn't wow me like CVS2 wowed me. You know, I think it's really apparent from the start. Unfortunately,
nothing quite like being so hyped up for this game, like, because the roster is fantastic and the way they were like dripping out who was in it. I remember hearing that the arcade nearby had gotten it, like, well, a day I was at work, and I spent the whole, like, time waiting until the clock hit 9 o'clock so I could go to the arcade and check it out, and this is what I got there to experience as a big CVS2 fan. I'm like, what the heck happened here?
And I think...
I still want to know what the heck happened here.
Yes, I agree.
And I think part of the problem... lies in the fact that all the stuff that we talked about, how CVS2 gives you so many, you know, six different grooves, and you can customize your own groove, and all these characters have different methods you can play with. And SVC Cast just does not do any of that. There are no grooves. Like, here's the one, here's how you play the game. Here's your life meter, here's your super meter. It's one-on-one. There's no teams whatsoever. There's no ratios whatsoever. The super meter is kind of weird. You know, it's kind of a weird system to come up with. Yeah. Every character has something they call an exceed move, where you can do this one super, super move when you're at low life, but only once per match. That's it. You get one chance per match to do this exceed move. And, you know, a lot of these sprites are really, really cool. Certainly, again, much like the CVS games, like, SNK had to redraw all the Capcom characters, and some of these Capcom sprites are awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we took this the last time, but, you know, like, the Dimitri sprite is really goddamn cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyone's his favorites? Go ahead.
I really like the Dalsim sprite, because I feel like this is the first time that he really had, like, the rubber limb thing going on that all of the subsequent games with Dalsim have really leaned into. So he's just a lot of fun to watch. Chun-Li, they also pulled from, like, the Third Strike sprite again, and she is, like, beautifully animated in this game. She looks great.
Yeah. Hugo, I really like the way Hugo the Sagat looks in this.
Big Hugo.
Oh, Sagat looks so good.
Sagat and Hugo look awesome. Yeah.
I think the sprites, though, also kind of highlight where SNK was at financially at the time, because most of the sprites are pretty much originally drawn, but some frames are kind of recycled from other things. Like, I think it was, like, only recently discovered that Balrog's idle stance is, like, traced over from Heavy D in like KOF. I think it's KOF 98 stance. Everything else is like original, but it's just the idol stance. It's just Heavy D's redrawn. But otherwise, yeah, Dimitri looks sick in this game. I don't even think Capcom's animated like made him look as cool as he does in SVC Chaos.
I think this game, we were just talking about CVS 2 with how like it has a distinct look to it. And other than the sprites for SVC Chaos, I think that like everything looks basically stock to me in this game. Like, you know, the way the UI looks, it's like they were just dinking around with development tools and just had lots of great sprites kind of thing. And, you know, I don't really have a ton of things to say about the game itself other than like kind of agreeing with what Kevin said in that past episode that like if they had another chance at another pass at this, like if there was like the SVC Chaos 2.0 or the 1.5 or something like this, it would have felt like a better game. But it just feels, other than the sprite work, it just feels cheap and sort of rushed to me.
There's some things I like about it. I like, for single player content, the fact that they have like all the characters with these like cute little intros
that are
very much in keeping with their personalities. That's very cute. The roster, again, fantastic. The bosses are very cool. You know, having these secret final bosses of Goddess Athena from like the 1986 game, I think. She's in a red bikini for some reason, and a red armor. Just a random red armor from Ghosts and Goblins. Like, that's really cool. And they have a lot of really fascinating sprite work. And there's a real, like, implication that all of these characters are in purgatory and you're sort of fighting to escape. It's just, you know, this game, like you said, it's very flat. The like, input engine is very fussy, even for a Neo Geo game. It's really rough to get it to like do the moves you want it to do. The mechanics just don't quite work right. It's interesting. And not like necessarily the fun kind of interesting, but interesting. I think it's fun to mess with.
Yeah, personally. It's fun to tinker with. I think this game Delsim calls Ryu a narcissist, and I always thought that was hilarious. Like, that's right on the money. But yeah.
I think it's a really weird game mechanically and aesthetically, but there's some like glimmers of like some really neat stuff in there. Like, if you encounter Zero as a boss, it'll actually like animate like the little warning screen that pops up when you play like, do boss fights in Mega Man Zero games.
Yeah.
Also started like Zero's streak of just being stupidly good in any fighting game he's in. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah. Any and every.
But yeah, very weird. Like the step mechanic in that game, like the forward step mechanic it's like kind of weird to wrap your head around. It's an interesting game to just kind of lab out every now and then.
My feeling is that if you don't care about the Capcom characters, just play Neo Geo Battle Coliseum because they took a lot of the mechanics from this game and made them like work really well together.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem is that the stages are exceptionally empty. You know, SNK, you know, has gone out of their way to make stages over the years that are just overflowing with life. And Capcom SNK 2 carried that ball. You know, there, even the stages in like the Arctic Circle, a ship comes in from the background and flags come out of the ship. And then like a TV crew appears and they're filming you fight. And the whole thing's like, okay, we're in the Arctic Circle, but like the Arctic Circle has never looked more colorful. And then SVC Chaos is like, okay, now we're in the nude place. Which is like an empty church. And now we're like in a deserted train yard. Now we're in a giant like spinning, I don't know, particle collider. I don't know what the hell this thing is. And there's like a tie-in Chinese manga that explains the plot of this game that, you know, maybe you read 20 years ago, but I certainly didn't.
Oh, those are all absolutely insane. I think for this particular one, they had a plot line where Iori and Morgan like hook up and have a child who's like a whole thing in that story.
It's crazy.
I gotta find
it. I think
this.
It also sets up like the overall plot of the game. Like, it's in purgatory, but if I'm remembering right, it basically states that Bison quote word of like a way to get into purgatory. There was like some kind of tournament there, and if you won, like you got a wish or something. So Bison goes and makes a device that nukes the entire planet. So now everybody's in purgatory, you know, just not by their own free will because of Bison. And now everybody's fighting to get out. Which I guess that kind of contextualizes the stages, but I mean, yeah, those mountain ones are wild. Yeah.
So it's a little bit of plot spackle, I feel like.
Yeah.
But again, even saying this, like, there's still lots of love here in the details. I do love the fact that, you know, because Dimitri's in the game and he has Midnight Bliss, that means every character has an alternate sexy version because that's his whole thing. He when he grabs you and drinks your blood, but first he turns you into a sexy lady. So every character has their own sexy sprite. And then Athena and Red Armor, if you fight them and you lose, you get transformed into something else. And again, it's a unique sprite for every character. Athena turns you into some sort of animal, and Red Armor turns you into some sort of monster or yokai, whatever. And some of these sprites are, like, adorable and hilarious. I know, like, Guile turns into a chicken, but he retains, like, the flat top. Dan, if Red Armor defeats Dan, Dan is still Dan, and he makes a face. Like, what the hell is this? Like, what, am I my worst nightmare? What are you saying? It's like, there's a lot of goofy stuff here that they didn't have to do that, but they did it. It's just a shame. It's a shame that not everything else works together. It just doesn't.
And, like, the deep cuts, like, they put in Tessa from Red Earth, game that nobody played on the CPS3, and, like, she has all sorts of personality and, like, all of her moves and her animations, like throwing out birds and cats and all sorts of bizarro, like, magic tech. Oh my god. Yeah, it's just like all this effort put forth to what end? I guess is the best way to put it.
I had a friend that was, he hates this game to this day because the one time he got Earthquake in a crossover game, it was this one. Because he's a big Sam Show guy.
Quake is great.
He just did not like the game. So he was at Evo when the re-release got announced, and like he was recording, you know, the announcement, and as soon as it came on screen, he just turned off the camera.
Aww.
he wanted nothing to do with it.
Oh man.
But really, really nice deep cuts overall, yeah.
I'm glad it got a reissue. I kind of wish they'd retained the improvements to the PS2 and Xbox port to the input reader.
Yes.
But, like,
I mean, at least the netcode itself is decent.
Yeah, the netcode's good. Like, it's the best way to play this game online. It's just, you know, you're still playing SVC Chaos. And hey, if you really like janky, like, bad but still fun games, like, this is very solid. I can't say that it's like an unfun game. It's just a very silly game.
You can't call this Kusoge, right? Like, it's not quite like that. But there is some busted weirdness going on just top to bottom here.
Yeah. I know some tournaments got ran recently in the wake of that re-release, and Mars people in particular have kind of found like a newfound they've gotten like a newfound appreciation for just how silly that character is, both competitively and just aesthetically, because like when you win with them, it's like they're literally saying like pee pee poo poo, like something like that. Because you know, obviously they can't speak, you know, can't speak any kind of language. Like, but
I like when he pulls out the flip phone with like another Mars people on it. It's like, what the hell's going on here?
Incredibly goofy character.
But yes, as an SK game, this is not part of the upcoming collection, but it did make a surprise return to really all platforms. It's on PlayStation 4, it's on Steam, it's on Switch, it's on GOG. So if you want this game, you can just play it right now. You don't have to spend $200 like I did, you know? Because that's what Neo Geo games cost back in the day, too. Actually, this might have been $300. This might have been $300.
Do not.
I was going to say, $200 sounds low for that particular game.
Like for that game?
Might have been $300 at this point.
Do not look up how much it costs now for the original Neo Geo cards.
Oh, I can imagine.
It will give you a heart attack.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of the end of the story. I mean, that's certainly the end of the series. You know, we never got a Capcom SNK3, which might have been in the works. But I feel like part of this, you know, part of the reason I wanted to have this conversation, you know, with everyone who was there at the time, it's like, this was an incredibly exciting moment. You know, like this, to me, this hit right before like WWF versus WCW, which is kind of like, oh my God, You know, all my favorites colliding. And frankly, this worked out a lot better than the invasion angle. So I have much fonder memories of this experience and how crazy it was to see all this, these happening. And oh my God, you know, it's also, it's funny because this also lands around the same time as Mugen, which Mugen also let us, you know, indulge in our wildest fantasies, but it still wasn't quite the same because it's all like fan made and a lot of it was, you know, janky as hell because we didn't know what we were doing, but it still was fun. So it was really nice to see this, like, oh no, this is, you know, lots of original sprite work here, lots of crazy backgrounds, lots of great goddamn music. And it was exceptionally, you know, it's too bad that it kind of led to a long, quiet period of no exciting news. But, you know, eventually things got better. Eventually.
I'm just glad Capcom and SNK seem to have, like, a really healthy relationship now.
Yeah.
I mean, we got crossovers with Terry and Mai in Street Fighter. We've got Ken and Chun-Li go into Fatal Fury. All of the old games have been reissued at this point, except for, I think, the DS Card Fighters game, and I'm not sure who's really...
I don't think anybody wants that.
...to play that. But, I think if there were a better time for them to make a third game in either CVS or SVC, now is it. So, hopefully we get something in the next few years. I'd love to see it.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
It would be awesome, but it is unfortunate because... what's happened today, and it's part of this reality of just, I think, game development in general, is that everyone's kind of doing a crossover at some level, you know? So the magic that happened, you know, at this point, 25 years ago, it's not going to feel the same because, yeah, like, Tekken 8 had Akuma and Geese Howard in it, you know? Like you've already mentioned, Street Fighter 6 has SNK characters in it. Fatal Fury has Capcom characters in it. So it's like, when everything's a crossover... there's no incentive to make a crossover exclusive kind of thing anymore. So I would love to see it. I'm not saying no, you know, much like the Marvel Capcom game. Like I would love to see more Marvel Capcom games. I'd love to see more Capcom SNK games. Absolutely. Yes, please. But at this point, since people are just willing to put people in any game they can get the license to, you know,
it wouldn't feel like an event the same way CVS 1 and 2 did. Yeah.
Like, I get it.
Especially if you go back. If you go back and just, you know, order us on YouTube. Go to YouTube. Watch the attract mode for Capcom SNK1 on, you know, the Naomi. And it's like, it's tons of arcade screens from different SNK and Capcom games. And, like, you're spinning from space. And you're zooming in on the planet Earth. And it's like, you thought this would never happen. And now it's happening. And, like, you feel like that things, like, the ground is going to shake apart. Like, this is an epic confrontation! Roar!
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, Mai's Street Fighter 6, and she's here, and she's hot, and that's just the way things are. Okay. All right.
So you're saying Fortnite has ruined everything for these crossover games.
I mean...
so we need to end Fortnite, and then we can get CVS3.
I'm not going to point fingers, but yeah, you know, it's the fact that I can play, you know, I can play Fortnite as Sakura, you know... Sakura. It's a little weird.
You know, with who, without getting too deep into this, with who basically owns SNK now, who also has a big stake in Capcom, I think the odds are better that we would get a CVS 3 than even maybe a Marvel 3 or a Marvel 4, right?
That's true.
So I think that this, I don't want to say it's going to be a slam dunk, but like, you know, a lot of people have asked the developers on both sides over the last year or so, like, is this a thing? Are you planning on doing this? And everyone seems into the idea, even though there hasn't really been any confirmation one way or the other. I think it's really probably an inevitability that we're going to see something, but I've been wrong about this stuff before, so who knows? But
I feel like it's likelier to come from SNK developers than Capcom, just because Capcom seems to like, that, we do Street Fighter, and that's all. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm at. I feel like if it does happen, it might be like SNK developed. I mean, really great to see them kind of, you know, redeem themselves from SVC Chaos. But, I mean, I'll take it whichever way it comes, I'll be honest.
I know that this isn't a popular opinion, but I would like just like to see SNK go back and tinker with SVC Chaos, just like make a new version of it. I'm not kidding.
I would take SVC Chaos Unlimited Match. That would be great.
Right. put a couple extra characters in it, fix the game. Like, if that were to come from the Capcom side, like, if there would be, like, an official Ford strike of Street Fighter 3, like, people would flip, and they would, and, like, not in a good way. Like, we've seen this time and again where, like, Capcom's put out new versions of games, and like, the hardcore, like, I'm never fucking playing that. Never, ever, ever. Don't even put it in front of me. But, like, I think SNK probably has a pass there. They could probably pull it off.
But, yeah, I can say people like the KOF UM game, so, yeah.
Right, right.
And on that note, I think we're done here. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening to Retronauts. We really appreciate your ears, and if you have it, your money. But, you know, this is a free, this is, will be released as a free podcast. So if you're listening for free, by all means, thank you very much. But we do want you to know that there is a Patreon, patreon.com/retronauts, what really keeps the show going. So if you join the Patreon, $3 a month gets you episodes 1 week in advance, higher bitrate. $5 a month, just a pittance more, gets you exclusive episodes every month, two, sometimes three if we have extra Fridays. Weekly columns for myself. I also read you the columns. I've done plenty of columns so far on Capcom and SNK games to whet your appetite, including Capcom SNK1. And, of course, Discord access, where we all talk about the games all the time, like these sort of games as well. So if you have the means, we'd really appreciate it. Patreon.com/retronauts to keep us going here. But thank you to my guests. I'd love all of you to tell the audience where they can find you on the internet if you want the internet to come find you. Kevin, why don't you go first?
You can find me on Blue Sky at AtariArchive.org, which is also my website and the name of my book that you can purchase through Limited Run and Amazon, and my YouTube series that it's all stemming from. If you love early video game history, I got you covered. Also, come play CVS2 at... you know, DC locals.
All right. John.
Hi, I'm John. You can find me on Blue Sky at John Learned. I thought there was a dot in there for the longest time, and no, there's no dot in there. It's just John Learned. I have a YouTube channel. I call it Annotated Games, but you can just do a search on YouTube for me, John Learned. I've been doing a lot of shorts lately. Somebody convinced me to basically play the hits with the Annotated Symphony of the Night, so I've been making shorts out of them. So two a week, give or take. So check those out.
And Jero?
So I'm Jero. I can be found on both Blue Sky and YouTube as the Seven Force. And on YouTube, I do fighting game retrospectives. I primarily focus on the Capcom crossover games, Marvel versus Capcom, Capcom versus SNK, Tatsunoko versus Capcom. But I also talk about various little things about fighting games. I recently did a video about fighting game moves appearing in non-fighting games. So things of that nature. So yeah, I can be found there.
It is a great YouTube channel, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I also appreciate that when you do a comic book character, you always mention a comic book recommendation, which is why I picked up this Sabretooth Death Hunt.
Is that Death Hunt? Oh, yeah. Nice.
I picked this up recently here in Osaka and had a great time reading this little story by Larry Hama.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm a big comic book fan, so I just kind of wanted to spread that joy. So I'm always glad to hear people actually, like, you know, getting recommendations.
As for me, your host, my name is Diamond Fight. You can find me around the internet by looking for Fight Club. That's F-E-I-T, my last name, C-L-U-B, the English word you already know, .me. Fightclub.me is my website, or Fight Club on Blue Sky and YouTube and Twitch and most platforms these days. And I guess that's it. So I guess we all get down to New York together, and we'll sit underneath that giant beer man, and just we'll all drink beer together.
Beer cowboy.
Johnny beer.
Yeah.
Good night.